Good evening, and welcome to the Monday, September 13th meeting of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present, and we'll begin our meeting with a moment of silence. Thank you. To lead us in the pledge tonight, Andrea, would you please do us the honors?
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Andrea. For our business this evening, we have John and Ginger D'Annunzio, the new owners of Sand Prince. I only see Ginger. No, John.
We have children.
Hello, Ginger. Tell us about your new business.
We recently took over Sand Prince Photography, located at 870 Main Street, just around the corner from the Bay Theater. And we are loving it. We love the area. We've been here for 3 years. The web address is www.sandprincephotos.com. And we are all about alternative portraits. I'm a photojournalist by my background. I've worked for newspapers in Montana, Maine, New Mexico, Costa Rica, and London, where I'm from. I've also been a paparazzi, so watch out. We take a lot of different types of photographs. I just have a couple of visual aids. You know, families having fun. We offer what the local department store does, but with a twist. So it's more natural, more spontaneous, much more jumping around, laughing, but we also do business portraits, which can be quite serious. This is a local author. This is for his book jacket. And we do new parents. We have a studio, but we prefer to celebrate the local area because it's so stunning here. I don't need to tell you that. And we go as far as Cayucas down to Avila. Pretty much. We spend a lot of time in Montana de Oro and Los Osos, Sweet Springs. And we offer color, black and white, prints, CDs, you name it. We do it all in the store. And the emphasis is on photography for the everyday person. So you don't have to be rich or famous to have a great photo shoot. Lots of people tell me, I've never done a photo shoot before. And I think, well, neither have I, actually. It's really fun. Really, really fun. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else to say, really.
Hours are open?
We are open 10:30 to 3:30 every day but Tuesday.
Okay.
And the big thing about us is that the photo shoot is free. All you pay for is the prints. You can buy CDs if you want to, but you could, for example, this past Father's Day, two teenage brother and sister came in and said, can we do a photo shoot? We went down to the beach, had a fantastic time. They bought two prints. It was wonderful, and I was so thrilled because it was for their father, and it was their idea. So it doesn't matter how much you want to spend with everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Ginger, would you mind saying your website again?
Thank you. www.sandprincephotos.com. With my funny accent.
We wish you well. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, other announcements. All of us, I think, were invited to check out the new or improving every day botanical gardens out by Cuesta College. And I would just encourage any of you who haven't been there in a while, which I hadn't, to check it out again. It's growing by leaps and bounds, and their future plans are absolutely astounding. They are planning a large enough Mediterranean primarily garden to rival one in England that draws 150 million people a year. So I think it's really something. It's very exciting. It would be a tremendous tourist draw for us. And it was really an interesting presentation. If you, they've got a newsletter, and if you go out there, you can pick this up right at one of the gates there and walk around. It's free. At this point, it's free. So take advantage of that, and each of you get one of these because she wants to make sure you all get out there. I think Rick did.
I've been a couple of times.
Have you? Okay. It's really wonderful. So I would advise anyone to take the time to go out there. It's really beautiful, very pleasant, educational walk. You'll find out what's growing all around you. And as I said, it's free. So that's it for my announcements. Betty? Rick?
Just to piggyback on that, I was out there last week with my wife, and we had a presentation given, and it is really amazing the plans that they have. And they have like five geographical areas that are going to represent the different geographical areas of the world and grow things in their natural state. That, and then they're going to put in restaurants. Like in the Mediterranean area, there will be a Greek restaurant, and it's really fabulous plans. And they'll be looking for some money from the county coming up. So it'd be nice to ask your representatives to maybe support that, because it would probably help us out here in Morro Bay.
Quite a bit.
Thanks.
Noah?
Thanks. I just wanted to go ahead and announce a couple of the items that I talked about last meeting, but bring them up again because they're still timely with our PWAB meeting this week. The Public Works Advisory Board, the Public Works Advisory Board is having a special meeting focused on transit. And the focus of the meeting is to actually gather and review input from the public about how our new adjustments with the transit system are being received, improvements we could think about. And that meeting is actually going to be at a special date and time. We're going to be going this Wednesday, the 15th, at 3 p.m. at the Community Center. And our staff has arranged for free public transit for anyone that is going to that meeting. All they have to do is mention that they're going to the PUAB meeting. And so you get picked up and dropped off for free, and the ride home as well. For anyone who's not able to access the new transit and are really interested in going and participating, the Senior Center has offered to do a free shuttle pickup through some volunteers, and their number is 772-4421. So once again, the PWAB special meeting this week is the 15th at 3 p.m. at our community center. And then another update and invitation to our wastewater treatment plant tours that we've got going on to observe and interact with a couple of different plants that have some relation to what we're deciding with our Morro Bay Cayucas plants. We've had two successful tours to each of these, and the upcoming tour dates are Pismo Beach is actually going to be this Sunday from 1 to 3. That's the 19th. And then Santa Paula, the PERC facility, is going to be September 26th. That's also a Sunday from 1 to 3. And I have not yet confirmed a date for our own wastewater treatment plants to do a tour there as well, but it'll be sometime in mid to late October is what we're anticipating there. So if you're interested in more information or a carpool to any of those tours, you can call me at 772-7668.
Thank you. Carla?
Good evening. Thank you. Just a handful of reminders. This Friday, the 17th, is Morro Bay High School's first home game. It's a preseason game, so hopefully everyone who's in town will go down and support the Pirates. The 18th is our Avocado and Margarita Festival, and it's in the afternoon down on the Embarcadero, but in the morning is the Coast Guard and Fire Department Challenge, and that's down towards the rock there, so that'll be a lot of fun to attend. The 25th, the following Saturday, is National Clean Shores Beach Cleanup. There are several locations that you can go down to the rock and the cloisters in those areas to do beach cleanup. Also on the 25th is the countywide day of what they're calling Operation Medicine Cabinet. We talked a little bit about it last meeting. It will be a opportunity to turn in pharmaceuticals at the local police departments throughout the county and also the sheriff's department. So that'll be on September 25th, and then that program will be ongoing. And I really want to give a lot of credit to Bruce Keough, who worked with Integrated Waste Management, and Tim Olivas, Chief Olivas, to get all the rest of the county to participate in that. So it's a great, great thing. We won't have it going in the water anymore. And that's it for now.
Thank you. Okay, and our city reports, police and fire.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Again, it's been a busy week. A lot of advanced life support calls and medical issues But a couple interesting things that may be a little different. We had a structure fire in Los Osos over the weekend. CAL FIRE requested over mutual aid to assist in putting that out. It's a small structure, but significant fire damage to that. And that same shift, we had a vehicle that left the highway on Highway 1, ended up on Quintana, went through a cypress tree in that area there. Fortunately, it looked like the injuries were fairly minor, so that was the good thing. Thankful for good, solid cars. Most people are still asking us about the fire station, and I just want to let people know it's still moving forward. The environmental assessment is rapidly going forward. We've received the historical documentation. I gave it a good read, found out a lot about Juan Cabrillo camping at Little Morro Creek, but the biological study should be to the city tomorrow. Is that correct, Dylan? We should have that tomorrow, and all those things are moving forward to FEMA for their evaluation as well. So we continue to move forward and are encouraged by that.
Okay. I think Noah had a question for you.
Yeah, Mr. Pond, a couple of people have asked me about the parking lot, and at this point it doesn't seem like there's signage in there, and the question was, are people allowed to park there during during the week, or what is the status of that as far as access?
Thank you for asking that. It is essentially a city parking lot at this time, but we do use that and save some of the slots for firefighters. When we have a general alarm or a significant event where our firefighters need to come from home, they have to have somewhere to park. And so we're planning on painting several of those spaces red for fire park business only to save those. Otherwise, during Art in the Park and during some of the other events, it gets filled up. And we do not want people going beyond the gate, though. There is a gate there, and quite often we'll find the public parked back in there, so we're trying to stop that. And we do have a sign up, and during some of the bigger weekends, we'll put up some cones to prevent that. But thank you. There are some spaces there that people can use right now, you know, if they have an event across the street. But once the building phase two is completed, it'll revert to more of a business type of use.
And Commander Millard.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm Commander Brian Millard here on Chief Oliva's behalf tonight. Thankfully, this past couple weeks has been just a little bit lighter on the felony scale for our department, allowing our single investigator to catch up. A couple interesting items is that we were able to, I'm not sure if Chief mentioned this last meeting, arrest three individuals for the graffiti at Morro Rock, which has been an outstanding case since June. This was based on tips from the citizens leading to YouTube videos, which actually allowed us to identify those involved. All three of them were arrested. They're all from San Luis Obispo, and they're all awaiting trial on those offenses. So we're pleased everyone worked together on that offense. Recently, as of last week, I do have to report a 15-year-old female juvenile was approached on the bike path leading from Moore Bay High School towards Duke Energy in those back tree line area by a male adult. It was inappropriate questioning. Thankfully, nothing else occurred. We're just asking everyone to just keep their eyes open and understand that you do have to be vigilant. We ask that all juveniles walk in groups whenever possible. But as of right now, we don't have anything further on that. Countywide, our department recently participated in and completed a summer mobilization period called Avoid the 14, which consists of all the law enforcement agencies in this county. That's an enforcement campaign for DUI-related offenses. An 18-day enforcement period ending as of Labor Day weekend removed 114 intoxicated drivers from this county's roadways. That's a combination of everyone involved. As Councilmember Borchard mentioned, we are beginning Operation Medicine Cabinet on September 25th, and there is additional information on that entire operation federally available through the DEA's website. I don't have that address, but that addresses the complete beginning of the operation where we took ours from. Departmentally, Sam Rodriguez, the most recent hire as a police officer, is into his second week as a police officer here, and he's under the field training officer, Gene Stewart. Doing well thus far, and we're looking forward to a good program. And most recently, Susan Gomes, a 16-year veteran of our department, was selected as our latest sergeant. And this was after a lengthy process that consisted of two separate oral board panels, a written test, and a chief's interview. She was selected from 11 total applicants, which included people from inside and outside of the county, and we'll be transitioning her from investigations to patrol later this month into next month. And that concludes for police.
Okay, thank you. Yes, question?
Are we going to ask the DA for any monetary damages on that trial?
It is certainly a consideration. However, given the specifics of who we arrested, I believe we're probably going to be unable to reclaim much of the damages, but cost recovery is certainly an option.
Okay. Andrew, administration.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Three quick things. The city has put a new link on the front page of our website entitled Employee Compensation Information, and that gives you a link on our city website to information about city employee salaries and compensations, the memorandums of understanding for those employees. As well, on Friday, the League of California Cities released a study that they just recently completed that was answered by 420 of the 468 cities in California about city manager compensation. As we all know, that's been a hot topic in the last couple of months as a result of the Bell issue. So if you go to the League of California Cities website, you can find that. We will also be linking that to our page in the next few days. And then lastly, about the website, I believe on Thursday of last week, we put up the revised wastewater treatment plant upgrade website, webpage on our website. It's got a number of revised information, also a number of documents such as the urban water management plan, the recycled water study, and the facility master plan with amendments 1 and 2. We will be in the next couple of days, again, on the home page, providing a link directly to that page, so for ease of finding that information. And that's all I have today. Thanks. Okay. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. What is the status of the draft EIR release? Has that happened today as we anticipated?
No, it didn't. The consultant still has a couple of changes. I think the last section is the air quality section that they're revising. They anticipate Wednesday as a release for the draft EIR.
And that'll also be posted at the website?
Yes, it will.
Great, thanks.
Okay, and Rob, closed session?
Yes, good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, Councilman in closed session to discuss labor negotiations and to discuss real property transactions. The real property transactions discussed was the Salt Building, Bridges Landing, the Embarcadero Grill, and the Outrigger. As to the real property transactions and the labor negotiations, no action that was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Okay. And that concludes our report, so we'll start with public comment. There's time for everyone, not to worry.
Hi, I'm Natalia Merzoyan. I'm becoming a bit more familiar face to you all, I think. I've been to several of these meetings lately. I have been drawn in by my interest in the wastewater treatment upgrade. And I have to say... First of all, I should say I took advantage of NOAA's carpool trips and went down to Santa Paula, and I was extremely impressed, as I thought I would be when I heard all the facts about what the benefits of that system would be. And I just, it's totally brilliant. It's clean, it's odorless, and smaller footprint. You know all of the advantages. I mean, people have talked about that many times. It's built, I would say, on a human digestive tract, which is very amazing and natural and easy to understand. They have the little villi in the first stage that are filtering out, the initial things that need to be filtered out, and there's something that corresponds to your small intestine that's coagulating stuff. It has something that could be likened to a colon that draws out all the water, and then it's put through a kind of a screwdrive mechanism that then enables it to be loaded on a truck. It's hauled off and finally pelletized so that it can be burned for electricity. It's fabulous. And so that leads me to my mystification about why this is not immediately being chosen, as I think many people, whenever I talk to people, they're totally mystified about why the city seems to be going to the other operation. And I even asked Andrea Luker about that, and when I talk to staff members, they present me with the fact that, well, they were late to the table. PERC wasn't there with their bid, and I felt a little stumped about that. And then I found out that the proposal was worded so that they were unable to give a bid because they didn't have an oxidation ditch. Okay. You only allowed oxidation ditches.
You need to wrap up. Your time's up.
Well, I'm almost through. I have a lot more to say, actually, but why didn't our city staff, why couldn't they tell me that?
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Robert Davis. I live in Morro Bay. I'm speaking tonight as a representative of the San Luis Obispo Bicycle Club to tell you about our annual bicycling event that will come to Morro Bay in a couple of weeks. The bike club will host its 39th annual Lighthouse Bike Ride for Charities on September 25th. We expect about 1,200 riders on the route starting at 7 a.m. We tell the riders that we require them to ride safely, to observe traffic laws, to share the road with cars, and to respect local residents. The route is mostly on Highway 1 between Cuesta College and Piedras Blancas. Participants will ride to the lighthouse and back to the college. This year, Caltrans has asked us to change the way we go through Morro Bay. And that's what this overhead display represents. The first variation is at South Bay Boulevard. In the morning, northbound cyclists will exit the freeway at South Bay, cross the boulevard, and re-enter the freeway using the on-ramp. When they get to Main Street off-ramp in town, which is represented here, they will exit the freeway at the Main Street off-ramp, turn left on Main, ride to Atascadero Road. They will turn left there, that's a four-way stop, and they will re-enter the freeway using the on-ramp. Morro Bay police officers will control traffic in this area. North of town at Toro Creek, Highway Patrol will cone off the northbound number 2 lane to allow cyclists to safely cross the bridge where there's no shoulder. And that will occur for a period of about 2 hours in the morning. In the afternoon, southbound cyclists coming back will exit the freeway in Morro Bay at the Highway 41 interchange, cross Atascadero Road, and re-enter the freeway using the on-ramp. They will use the weaving lane to get back onto the freeway shoulder to continue up the hill through town to South Bay. And again, when they get to South Bay, they will get off the freeway, cross South Bay, and re-enter the freeway using the on-ramp. The Highway Patrol will provide traffic control there in the afternoon. Morro Bay Community Service volunteers will be stationed at various on- and off-ramps in the morning and in the afternoon to alert motorists. The course opens at 7 and closes at 5 p.m., and so all the streets should be clear by 4:30 or 5. We have contracted with CHP to pay for 3 units to patrol the route, and we will pay for Morro Bay police officers to control traffic through town.
Okay. Could you just say the date again so that we...
Yes, the date is September 25th.
Okay.
And if I can give a telephone number,
that'd
anyone
be great.
Who needs more information can call 543-5973.
Thank you.
Thanks. Want me to leave the overhead?
If you'd like to, yeah, then people can look at it during the break. Okay.
Thank you.
evening, Mayor and Council, and good evening, staff. So nice to see everybody. Mayor, I'm going to encourage you to kind of clarify the PERC. Oh, I'm sorry. My name is William Yates, and I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I apologize. There's so much misinformation going on, and including the history, and it's getting a little out of hand. I think the important thing, and you said it at the JPA meeting, is you are on looking at both. It's certainly the resistance to do that is understandable. I mean, you were on a course, you were on a path, you were way down the road, and in my opinion, kind of blindsided. I mean, stood up once at a Thursday morning meeting and said, we can save you $10 million, and this whole ball got rolling, and you got shouldered into it, and fine. And if it turns out it's going to save $10 million, I think, you know, you or whatever city council is there, I mean, it's going to do the smart thing on behalf of all the citizens. And it's not, everything has to be looked at, and nobody knows what the facts are. That's really not why I came tonight. This is just in response to Mrs. Mirzoyan. I came to talk about the two empty positions, the associate planner and the wastewater treatment collector. I've spoken to the guys in the wastewater treatment. I mean, I know, hopefully you all know what the morale's like, what's going on. They're stressed. They're like a rubber band that's, you know, out here. The planning department's the same way. Everybody knows the building trades in this town. I mean, everybody's holding on by a thread. The carpenters and the glass shops and the countertop people and all, anything we can do to just keep the building going, keep the permits moving and not getting slowed down is going to help everybody in town. The wastewater treatment guy has got to be replaced. They can't do it all on their own. I know you know this. These are budgeted positions. You've made the layoffs. So these positions need to be filled. I'm not against the rolling back the to 2% from the 2.7. I'm certainly willing to take a look at that. I see the wisdom in that. But under the SEIU contract, you can't do it in this with these positions. It's going to have to be thought out. That's a major change that will, you know, may happen. So it really doesn't enter into this argument. So I really encourage you to fill both of those positions. And thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council, staff. My name is John Barta. I'd like to speak on two items. First, item D3, the so-called tree ordinance. I'd like to point out something that, you know, this issue has gone around and around many times. People love trees, but people don't like regulation, and they don't like being told what to do. And if you leave people to their own devices, people will grow trees, nurture trees, and sometimes cut them down. Al George had a collection of pictures here many years ago that I saw. He took from the top of the rock when that was legal to do, every January 1st. And you could see a clear progression in those photos of more trees and more trees and more trees and more trees. All of that happened without the use and need of regulation. So I just want to say that what's being proposed is yet more regulation. There'll be permits involved. There'll be hearings involved. There'll be appeals involved. All of that impacts the city. Here we are in a time of economic stress. Our city budget is stressed, you know, and we're dreaming up regulations that really aren't necessary. And to get into some of the specifics, there's a lot of vagaries in there. 20 trees, landmark trees, or 20 groves of trees. I mean, it was very unclear, when I read the thing. So we could have 20 groves throughout the town that are considered landmark trees. A flat ban on several types, private trees and gray water. I mean, if I'm going to have a gray water system, I want to plant whatever trees I want to plant in my yard, and I don't know why we need regulations on that. Again, I just think this is one of those areas that's best left alone for a lot of reasons. Everybody loves trees. I love trees. When I was on the Planning Commission, I made sure that certain trees were protected. But this is just going too far, and it's not the right time to do it. Secondly, I'd like to talk briefly on the issue of PERC. You know, there's a lot of talk about PERC and the technology. The fact of the matter is there is no hard offer on the table. People have been told they're going to save so many dollars, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. The fact of the matter is there is no hard offer on the table. I repeat that. There is no hard offer on the table from the PERT folks. And in fact, you know, what they've talked about in the past is not that we will own the plant. We will own a 700-page contract, if it's like the one in Santa Paula, that will tell us what we're really getting. But it's not the physical plant that we're getting. It's a contract. It's a negotiation. It's about finance. It's about money. That's what it's really about. And we don't have that information. So you're being asked to grasp for something that is very unclear what it is. Everybody wants to do the right thing. But the fact of the matter is that that's not what's on the table here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Taylor Newton, and I live here in Morro Bay, and I'm a business owner in Morro Bay as well. I just want to do a brief where the landmark tree recommendation, as well as the revision of the master tree list, is before you tonight, and I've already presented at the Public Works Advisory Board as well as the Planning Commission on both of these topics. And I just tonight wanted to say that, you know, all of this is developed through, it's just a recommendation from the Morro Bay Volunteer Tree Committee. And that's made up of business professionals in the plant business, in the landscape business, and in biology. And there has been much debate and consideration from members of the committee as well as members of the public. And I wanted to thank in particular Rob Livick. He's been really, really helpful. And Melinda Elster. Wally McCray has been doing this for decades, and he's been very helpful. Noah Smuckler has just been vital. And June Christoph Jones really took the extra step beyond the P-Web to make a difference in this. And I just wanted to say personally that the landmark tree and recommendation, as well as the master tree list recommendation, I never felt like any of us thought that these were regulations. I definitely thought they were more like guidelines. And I think our ultimate goal was to get people more involved with the city and the environment, and try to put a positive in this current world we live in. That's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Jim Hayes, and you know why I'm here. This position, this D1, this position for a wastewater collections guy, is one of the most environmentally responsible positions in the city. And I need him there. I have to abide by certain laws that are set by the state. They don't allow me to have time to go around and do everything else, including all of the training that has to be done. You guys are painting me into a corner that I can't get out of when you say no to this position, and I don't think it's very fair. I promise to be calm, and I'm going to be, and that's all I got to say.
Thank you. Anyone else?
My name is Dorothy Cutter. I've lived in Morro Bay for 52 years, and I've seen lots of trees come down. So I think that people do need guidelines so we can save our trees, and I see nothing wrong with the tree ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Grand Crown, Morro Bay.
Hello.
The JPA money train has left the station with a bag full of checks, blank checks, and it is about to run us into the sewage ditch at the wastewater treatment plant in Morro Bay. The engineer is Janice Peters, driving at full throttle ahead, and Robert Ince is the conductor in the control of the I Have Friends trip. On board is old Hawaiian shirt Yates and naysayer Bart, conjuring up stories from the past to scare and derail the passengers from the truth. But no trains no longer run on that kind of smoke. Also aboard is Betty Winholtz, Noah Smuckler, and Mike Foster, who are trying to hold this runaway train on the track. They ask the tough questions for the information to get the safe journey into the future that works well and saves all passengers money. The passenger list is made up of Morro Bayans and Cayucans. As for the ticket price, Morro Bay will pay approximately 75% of the total cost, and Cayucas will only pay 25% of the total cost. But Cayucans have the added powerful advantage of an equal 50% vote with Morro Bay on all decisions while receiving 100% of the benefits on Morro Bay's property. This train is heading down a reckless track, and passengers need to pull the brakes on now. It's going down the track to the sounds of clickety-cash, cost overruns, clickety-cash, conflicts of interest, clickety-cash. Become informed before Peter's Inns spend your travel money for the next 30 years. Clickety-cash. Last week's JPA meeting was the most disgusting meeting I have ever attended. As in past, Mayor Peters chose to receive public comment in an inappropriate manner. 7 out of the 10 JPA members are willing to stay in the dark ages using old technologies and ideas about water conservation. And because of some prattle about keeping a promise to MWH, which is foolish and degrading to the residents of Morro Bay and Cayucas, who are paying the bill. And under the caption, conflict of interest, Robert Inns wants to pay a man $6,000 extra, who is currently being paid $180 an hour for reviewing an opposing project to the one he was hired for. That could lose him his $250,000 contract. Go figure. 3 members of the Cayucas board voted for a 2-story building, ignoring the desires of Morro Bay, immediately after Morro Bay City Council voiced their opinion for a 1-story building, except for Janice Peters, saying a 2-story would be nice because she does not want to hold back RRM's creative abilities. Oh, Janice, is this because your brother is the chief financial officer of RRM Designs? Oh, do I hear perceived conflict of interest? This project and this mayor? Oh, I'm disgusted. This is appalling. Where's the integrity? There is so much stuff going on in this whole project that's just appalling. And the meeting last Wednesday was disgusting.
Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Well, gosh, I got to say I'm a little disgusted with the last speaker, so I'm going to say it. There is no conflict of interest. RM is designing that. I had nothing to do with that choice. I get no money out of it. If there was a conflict, and there has been one time with RRM, it wasn't a conflict legally, but I did step down, so I have always been very careful about that, and I totally resent anybody suggesting that I would do something like that. I never have. I never will. So that disgusts me, Mr. Crowell. Now, as far as what we're doing with the sewer trail, I don't get it. We responded to public comments to say, look at PERC 2. So we are. We're studying both of them, and we're still getting all kind of criticism for not just jumping on the other train that happens to be pulling up alongside, instead of doing the study that we are now contracting someone to do so that we can do a reasonable comparison and make an informed decision. So I'm a little disgusted. Anybody else? Okay, we'll have a short break and then start our public hearings. Okay, AGP, we're back. There we go. All right. Why don't we go first for our consent agenda, since there's all of one item on it, and I'm hoping nobody wants to pull it. So.
Yeah. Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. I think that's the fastest consent agenda we've had in my whole term. Okay. All right. Item B1. Introduction and first reading of the ordinance increasing the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District assessment from 2% to 3%. Mr. Schultz.
Yes, good evening. This continues the process as we move along to increase your Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District from that 2% to 3%. On July 12, 2010, you adopted a resolution of intention indicating your intent to make this increase from 2% to 3%. Following the adoption of the resolution, we held a public meeting on August 9, 2010, and the protest hearing is tonight, September 13, 2010, to again hear any protests. We did send out notices to all the hoteliers. We have not received any opposition to date. Going back, the assessment for the fiscal year 2009-2010 was 3%, but pursuant to the ordinance, it rolled back to 2% beginning July of 2010. So this actually is just they've had a couple of months, July, August, September, October, and we'd begin collecting it November 1st. So they've had a few months where they've collected just 2% for the bid, but if you approve this for first reading and then second reading, it'll go in effect November 1st, and we'll be back at collecting 3%. So with that, I'll open it up for any questions or for your public comment, and then approval of first reading by introduction and title of Ordinance 562.
Okay. Any questions?
Yeah, I did actually have a question. It's in regards to our discussion about how the T-bid interacted with this adjustment, and specifically some of the details about fair share and future management of this 1%. And I've heard some concerns that we still are very vague in this ordinance about how we could be proceeding in the future to manage that additional 1%. And I guess the concern would be that we don't have enough definition about those elements, about how it would be reviewed, and what degree we would manage that 1%, and what the plan would be going forward to bring in additional parties. So if you could speak a little bit to that as far as the time frame, and why or why not we wouldn't want to include that in this ordinance.
I'm not sure I understand your question. Let me try this. The T-bid has been in favor. The board has been in favor of this increase. You will recall that they are taking some additional amounts of their funding, one for the visitor center, another a bit of funding for the VCB, and then a second bit of funding or third bit of funding for the filming of AGP. They have been at 3%. They've been down. Their budget now is based on 2%. So my assumption is when we go back to the 3%, they'll be making some amendments to their budget. I haven't seen that concern at the TBID meeting. I know a member of your board, their board is here tonight, and I'm anticipating that she's going to speak. But I'm the staff person there, and I haven't seen that concern to date.
I guess, though, the concern is that we've had some dialogue outside of the council meetings and inside the council meetings about the intent of that 1%, and how would the hotel industry know the level of percentage that they're going to be expected to fund, say, the visitor center into the future, and do we want or do we need to be more specific in this ordinance so there's some ability for them to know that it couldn't go back and be reopened and changed as far as their fair share of the funding for something like a visitor center.
We're going to be bringing back to you the specific some specific language in a separate staff meeting concerning the percentage of funding the visitor center. TBID board suggested 33%. The council discussed up to 40%, but there has been no discussion made. I'll send it over to the city attorney for putting in the ordinance, but I'm guessing that he probably doesn't want to do that.
Yeah. The ordinance currently, and I didn't do the whole ordinance, but I kept the whole ordinance regarding the annual budget the same, and that requires the annual budget to be done by the city council. As it's your assessment, just as you do the Cloisters assessment, you decide how that money is spent and what it's used for. And each year you'll take that and get recommendations from your T-bid like you did this year on how it should be spent. So each year there would be input. Really where the T-bid organization has their leverage is if in any year they don't feel that the budget is legitimate to their concerns, they can, by 51%, vote to abandon the assessment. So I think that's the process that we want to do. That's how it's normally done in other ones. I don't know if I really want to write in a percentage that's going to the visitor center because that could change from year to year.
My question is more generally, outside of this specific ordinance, how do we see different elements playing into this, like the addition of the vacation rentals or the RV parks? What is our timing there so we can understand how that process is going to play out and if we're going to see progress?
We hope to begin very soon the process of reaching out and finding out from vacation rentals or from RV parks how they would be like to be brought in, what percentage they would pay, and open that dialogue up with the TBID board here during the winter months and hopefully bring that back at the same time as it comes forward. You will see this now brought forward every April along at the same time, like I said, our other Cloisters assessment for the initial discussions to begin in April with your annual review, with your budget recommendations for the following year, and whether to include the vacation rentals and the RVs and how much. Hopefully we'll be able to bring you figures as to how much more money that would generate for the TBID. And that's the process you would go through for the budget to determine, you know, whether you do or do not fund the visitor center or any other issues. So,
any other questions?
If I could just clarify what Mr. Schultz just said, then that it's already on our agenda that it will come back with some discussion about the vacationers, RV parks, and the money part always will come back in terms of the budget.
Yes, every year. Yes, every April we'll do that and have the hearings at that time.
But the mobile home and RV item will go to TBID first, or will it come to us first?
It'll come to go to TBID first. You already told us to start researching it and coming up with the figures and seeing if there's also, you know, support for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last thing you want to do is bring in vacation rentals and possibly then be able to blow up the whole TBID because of how many there are. So we, you know, we need to be careful and put all that together. And we have continually, since we brought vacation rentals into our TOT 3 or 4 years, continue to increase that because we need to go out and find them to get them under a business license and get them complying with it. So, you know, we'll bring that to TBID, work it through, and bring it back for more information to you and see whether we take it the next step, which would be the formal process of including them. And like I said, what is the percentage? Is it 3%, 2%, 1%, and all of that kind of different information.
And would it be an assumption, a safe assumption, that all this might be done within the next budget, this budget cycle?
We're
so we'd know for next year?
For April,
yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, cool.
Okay, this is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak, please come forward.
Good evening, Council. My name is Joan Solu. I own the Beach Bungalow at the corner of Beach and Morrill. I had to think about that for a second. And I'm your TBID chair. Speaking here tonight just to show you that there's not a whole lot of protest going on, that I think your hoteliers are really looking forward to having a partnership with the city in order to go ahead and move forward and get things done with our visitor center to continue to remove some of the budgetary constraints that our city is currently going through. I also would like to say that we are really interested in helping, but again, we are really interested in helping with our fair share, and that we would always hope that the city would continue to, at some level, be our partner in tourism. We do have good news from the tourism front, and that is that I did open my tourism TOT reports. I encourage you to do the same. July of 2009, we ran a 68% occupancy, which is well below the county level. July of 2010, we ran a 72% occupancy level, which means we are creeping up. We are on the positive. We're moving up in numbers. And so what we are doing is taking effect and taking shape. We have continued to support our local events, such as the 4th of July, Morro Bay 4th, and their fireworks that were brilliantly received by our community, the wonderful event Dahlia Days, and also our local fabulous Harbor Festival. So we have continued to support them, and we look forward to supporting the BCB as well. And I should let you know, I know that maybe some people have not been really positive about the BCB, but I should let you know, for hoteliers, they are our number one referring website to morrobay.org, which is really, really important, which means that the traffic that comes in to our own website the highest percentage of that traffic comes in through the San Luis Obispo County Visitor and Conference Bureau website. So they have a click on to Morro Bay to get more information, and that's where people are seeking us out through. So I think it is really, really important that we continue to have a large, full-blooming presence with the VCB and countywide. And any countywide tourism will affect us directly or indirectly with pressure on rooms, which helps to drive the rate, which helps to fill our hotels and fill your tax dollars. In addition, I would just like to remind you that for every dollar spent in a hotel countywide, $3 is spent out in that city. So every time we have a dollar spent in our hotels, $3 is spent in restaurants and retail in the city, which benefits everyone. So I'd just like to say thank you for giving us this opportunity to work with you as a partner.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Comments? Motion?
Make a motion to approve B1.
Second.
Okay, any discussion?
Just to say that we've had a lot of discussion before, and I think we're pretty settled.
Yeah. I think they're doing a good job. I'm glad they're going to be doing a better one. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, Andrea?
This is ordinance number 562, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay amending the Morro Bay Municipal Code, section 3.60.050, regarding increasing the assessment to the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District.
All right. And with that, we will move on to item D1, which is authorization to replace the wastewater collection systems operator 3. Dylan?
Sure. We've been through this a couple times. We started in November for the D2 position. We got that kicked back, came back in, I believe, April, and ran through that D2 position. The D3 came to you 2 weeks ago. We're back again tonight. So I didn't prepare a long, drawn-out staff report. I'm not going to run through it all. You have your staff report before you tonight. I wanted to point out, as Jim stated earlier, this is a critical position for the operations of the Wastewater Collection Division. What they do, they really are the front line of environmental defense for the city of Morro Bay. If you think about it, you go, their sole source and function is to basically make sure that waste materials are properly handled and conveyed to the wastewater treatment plant. I'm here tonight to answer any questions, but we did look at it. We did put an analysis in there looking at, because of the concerns about 2% at 60 versus 2.7 at 55, so looking at the retirement formulas. If you do a sort of net present value and you look at how long, if it took you 1 year to get to that change, and so you said, okay, we're going to contract this position out for 1 year, you wouldn't get your money back for 35 years based on the cost of contracting it out for that 1 year and the cost savings that you'll have once you actually make that change. So your return period is very long. It was 24 and a half years at a simple return. If you actually do net present value and discount for CPI going up, it grows even longer. So it's about 30 years plus before you'll actually get your money back if you postpone this for 1 year. In addition to that, you actually lose that year's worth of training and experience that you've grown in that individual. You'll lose that when you cease contracting with them. And so we really want to encourage you tonight to go ahead and fill this position, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Questions? Betty?
I have a question for Ms. Luker about contracts. So if the council chooses not to hire or replace people, then you on your initiative will go out and contract individually and bring people in and then actually be paying them when we've asked you not to do that.
We would get direction from the council as far as what you would expect us to do, but our intent was that the job would need to get done, so we would look for a budget amendment and ask for direction from the council as to where you would like that money to come from, would be my movement.
Which seems to contradict the decision that we make, which is we don't want to spend this money, and somehow that department needs to absorb those tasks, and you have to prioritize those tasks, and some won't get done.
We could certainly go along for a period, and the council, we could inform the council on what would not get done. I think my concern, and Dylan can probably weigh in on this, is that In this position, we're talking about health and safety. If there's spills, these positions report to taking care of those spills. Certainly, I understand how the budget amendment works about getting extra money, so I wouldn't certainly just do it. But my recommendation to the council would be this: we need to have this task done, and the money needs to come from somewhere.
And then I have one question for Mr. Wade. A sheet that you gave us, which was very helpful about who the employees are and what their tasks are, I'm wondering why the new hire, and I know that he's hired at a different level, won't be picking up some of these tasks, or people who are more experienced couldn't pick up some of the level three tasks or move toward that direction as the new hire picks up some of the more lower level things.
Sure, that's actually an excellent question. The attachment was prepared back in November when we were actually looking at adding that position. So we didn't actually allocate the tasks to anybody. What we were basically doing was taking the tasks that the plan that you adopted. So the SSMP, the state issued an order that we needed to adopt an SSMP. We prepared that document, and it became the policy document for how we're managing the wastewater collections division. That was a policy document that council put into place. In that policy document, this is broken down by certain tasks, so the goals, organization, legal authority, those different elements. What we did was we took the required mandatory minimum elements from the SSMP, and then we basically said, how many hours do we do this? We just sort of threw them in there to count hours. It isn't really how the time is allocated amongst the division. That changes from on a day-to-day basis. So the new hire will assume some of these hours, and he will assume some of those tasks. What we were really trying to do as we showed this, when we put this together, was to basically show that there was more than enough hours of work for the five people. And then how that time gets split out and divvied up, it just really changes all the time based on kind of their capabilities and the tasks that they're working on. Most tasks in wastewater collections require a minimum of a two-man crew because of their unique exposures and hazards. You don't want a guy working in the street by himself. You don't want a guy working in a manhole. They actually, if they're doing work down in a manhole, then it becomes a three-man crew. So the tasks actually will switch around between these guys. What we were really trying to show and account for with this table, so I'm apologizing basically if I've confused you with this, but what we're trying to account for is basically here are the tasks that the plan states that we will do. And then we put hours to those tasks and said these are the kind of hours that we think are going to be spent on these tasks. But certainly the new staff member that comes on, starts next Monday, will fill in these roles and tasks as they're capable of doing so.
Other questions? Anybody? Comments? Okay, Carla, you want to start?
Sure. You know, I do understand that this is not a new hire, that it is a position that unfortunately became vacant, and so it's filling a position which is a little different. Yes, I did vote against it at the last council meeting, but it wasn't about filling the position. It's more about the fact that over the last two budget cycles, we have tried to address the pension and doing tiered benefits, and we've yet to achieve any of that. So it really falls back to that every time for me. And unfortunately, these become casualties along the way. The city manager gave us some information on, as did Mr. Wade, on what the difference of savings is on the tiered benefits, you know, and it was figured out over a year, but I also have it figured out over 30 years, so when you do that, it has a little more reality to it because it comes out to about $117,000 for one employee. So that's a lot. We have, you know, on an average 100 employees at different rates, so for me, that's where this comes. I want to fill the position, but I also don't want to have to wait till next year to start negotiating with the unions, with our contracts, with the SEIU employees and others. I think that it's going to be a long task, and I'd rather see if we can't start sooner than later, you know, open them up and start working now. And with that in mind, that we're going to work first step towards these tiered benefits. So right now, that's my comment. No?
Yeah, and you did a very good job of summarizing why I also have voted against this position. I see this as a universal problem, an issue that we must address. We absolutely cannot continue, and yet we have been, since I've been on the council, we haven't effectively addressed this problem that we all know is there. So this is a very tough decision because it's put our staff in a difficult position for what they're trying to accomplish with their job and what they're required to accomplish. Safety and environmental health is certainly an important thing for us to consider, but the further we kick the can down the road with the benefits, the less chance we have of really addressing it. And it's been very frustrating to be in that kind of dual situation where you're feeling pulled in both ways. So I've been thinking a lot about this, and still I'm having a hard time voting either way, and I really appreciate Ms. Borchard's suggestion that perhaps we could start to address those contracts sooner to avoid this. It's been very uncomfortable to want to get into that conversation and yet be told we need to wait another 6 months or however long it is. So, you know, that's a place that I'd like to actually get some more information about. The other thing that I felt was important within our staff report was we really have only been presented two options. It's either or. Either you fill this position or we're going to have to contract out at this price. And I really would have appreciated a third, more moderate type decision that gave us the chance to alleviate some of the pressure that I know our staff's feeling with their goals and what they're tasked to do. But realize that we are also in a position to stay responsive to what our citizens are demanding and what our budget projections will demand as we go forward. So those are my comments for now.
What sort of a third option are you talking about?
Well, I think that's part of our staff's job is to give us some options. Perhaps there could be some ideas that, as was mentioned, a little more prioritization, some things that perhaps, well, I wouldn't say luxuries, but won't be as high of a priority for us that we could acknowledge at this point we wouldn't be able to address. Those are important details that weren't really drawn out. It was, okay, we have everything that we need to do is an absolute imperative, and in some cases, many of them are, but if there was an option that gave us a middle ground, that would have been really interesting to at least look at and consider. It feels like we're extreme either way as far as those choices that were presented.
Okay. I know Rob was going to respond to your thing about opening up the bargaining early.
Yeah, good evening again. Executive staff certainly understands your frustration with the contracts, and it might be something that you remember when you go into these, especially for the two council members that have only been on for 2 years. They were 3- and 4-year agreements, so you haven't even been able to negotiate them yet. And so, you know, it might be something that you also want to consider is not doing those longer-term 3- or 4-year agreements, because that's exactly what happened. We've been in agreements that were longer, and so you haven't had a chance to open them, and you can't open them unless both sides agree. We certainly can. You can direct staff to begin those negotiations now instead of waiting a couple more months, because they do take time. But I don't think there's any staff person that doesn't know from the management executive level doesn't know that you will be looking at those benefits very closely, as all cities are doing at this point in time. I think the options are, you know, it really does say what division staff is doing. You know, right now it's trying to forego vacations. It's other leave banks. You know, it's skipping training activities, things that they're concerned about, that I'm concerned about. Missing training opportunities and activities from a risk management staff is very risky. So they are trying to do other things that stopgap. Certainly, you know, if, and this goes to Council Member Winholtz, if you direct staff to not hire this position and not outside contract, we won't. The ramifications of that, though, is that we could be in violation of laws either because of OSHA requirements or because of, you know, other issues that come up that just don't get fixed. Broken facilities get fixed and we don't have the manpower to do it. There's other ramifications that could occur, and we just bring those to you when they do occur, and you deal with them at that point in time.
Okay. Rick?
Well, I voted for this position at the last meeting because it was clear to me for the following reasons. I think that we need to do this. We have an old antiquated plant that we're depending on to work for a couple more years. So when something breaks down, we're kind of inclined not to spend a whole lot of money on a new piece of equipment, so we opt to do more maintenance than maybe we would have in the past because that piece of equipment's not going to be part of the new plant. So we're constantly band-aiding our plants, and which is going to cause a lot more maintenance and maintenance time. We're in a very fluid situation with our wastewater. It seems like we need a couple of spots just to take care of the mandated things that the state's continually putting on us, more and more mandates regarding wastewater. So these are things we have to do. If we don't do, we get fined. So I'm really more convinced than I was last time I voted that we need this position. But I will say when Carla brought that up about the two-tier benefit, I mean, we do have to do this, and everybody's going to have to do this. We can't continue this road that we've been on because it's bankrupting everybody. So we've got to get concessions from new hires, and this should probably, I think, be a motivator to get into the negotiations and get this done. But I am certainly in favor of, and it's not replacing the position, just keeping the position that's already budgeted.
Betty? I believe that I'd like to postpone hiring this person, that, not to say no, but say that we'll wait till after we begin our negotiations and see where we come down to with our benefits. I think that it's very hard having lost two people. I mean, not having the new person come on and having someone leave, so they're down to three instead of the normal four. And so I guess I'd like to see how that four-person department works before adding a fifth one back in. And then at that time, if there's struggle, if there's documented things that they can tell us about, that would be one thing. But at this point, I'm inclined to wait and vote no tonight.
Okay. There's certain things that the citizens expect of a city. They expect police, they expect fire, they expect water, and they expect public health and safety. And I think that's the issue we're talking about tonight. I am totally in favor of opening negotiations early. I think that's a good idea because we are going to have to get that concession. Just as has been said, other cities are going to have to, too. We can't keep going the way we've been going. However, to tie the hands of a department who desperately needs the manpower to maintain an aging facility and protect us with that facility and its uses is, I think, just counterproductive to the nth degree. This is an already budgeted position. We're not adding anything. We're putting in something that we already had, and if it wasn't for the unfortunate passing of the person holding the position, we would still have it. So this is not something that's costing us more money. It's something that is protecting our citizens and our facilities and keeping them operational, keeping them safe, and to say, okay, for this, just because we want to lower the participation in the pension and all of that, that's a great goal, but don't tie the hands of your public safety to achieve it when you can achieve it better and more logically doing it in the proper course of events. To penalize this department because they lost somebody is, I think, very foolish and very short-sighted. So with that, I would move that we replace the wastewater collection systems operator.
Second.
Discussion?
Okay.
I'd like to respond to a comment that both you and Mr. Grantham made, and I think it's a clarification, and that is this is not about the wastewater treatment plant. It is about the collection system. And so I don't see it as serious a threat as if it were for the wastewater treatment plant. I know that all our sewer pipes are, you know, as every city's is in dire need, and we've asked
them to do a lot of work, and they've been doing that, and therefore we gave them a fifth person. But there was operation happening before the fifth person came on, and I think for a few more months with four people, that I'm glad to wait.
Any more discussion?
Yes. Okay. Just one last comment before the vote. Well, two. A question is, and I agree with Ms. Winholtz. We have four. We had four before. We voted to hire a fifth one. Now we have three, but starting Monday we have four again. So it's a supervisorial position, and I understand the need for that and for that person to begin mentoring under Mr. Hayes, and I think that that's the value we lost. It's unfortunate that it would be that position. And my question then would be, would you include in that motion or make a second motion to direct staff to begin negotiations? Would you be willing to do that?
Absolutely. Okay.
And a follow-up question to that, as Mr. Schultz gets ready to respond, is there a way we can structure this further to make sure that we're successful in opening those negotiations?
You can't ensure you're going to be successful in opening them. You mean opening them before the contract's up. What I would suggest we do is begin the negotiations now. And I would do that as a separate motion so that it's a standalone motion so that it has more impact also.
And we can do that without it being specifically on the agenda?
Yes. You're just directing staff to begin that process.
Okay. All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We're voting on hiring this person.
On whether we're going to hire them? Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. 4-1 with Ms. Winholtz opposed. Okay, and I'll make a second motion directing staff to begin negotiations on new contracts that would decrease the pension formula.
Second.
Discussion? Is that across the board?
I would think so,
Do we want to limit it to just that? Don't we just want to start negotiating contracts
all right,
in general?
I'll change my motion to just begin negotiations for new contracts.
And I'll agree to the amendment.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Thank you. And next item, authorization to fill the associate planner position at the assistant planner level. Mr. Leivick.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council. This is an interesting position to be in, coming right after this last one.
Do you feel a bit of pressure, sir?
With the assistant planner, we don't have we're not going to spill anything into the ocean without having a planner there. Maybe a little blood, but
or time.
Yeah, or time. Right now, our planning staff is reduced to one full-time planning manager and one planning intern. We were down from basically a few years ago three planners. When Mr. Ambo was employed with the city, he was a planner by education and by trade and would step into the planning department. I'm a civil engineer by education and trade. I try to pretend I'm a planner sometimes, but I always told that I'm wrong. So I stick to engineering mainly. We're looking to fill this at the assistant planner level rather than the associate planner level that was budgeted. We feel that that's a more cost-effective way to develop our planning department, basically grow our own from the beginning rather than bringing in a journey-level planner. And we've had some success in doing that. We performed the same type of analysis that was discussed in the previous staff report with comparing benefits and looking at contracting. Some of the things that, while we don't have fines for spilling, we still do have to comply with state law. The time limit set forth in the Permit Streamlining Act, the California Environmental Quality Act, and the Coastal Act. We need to comply with those time frames. We need to analyze development proposals, check plan accuracy, planning inspections, code compliance, business license review, and zoning inquiries for the and general public assistance. The planning department is kind of the an economic engine for the building industry. If you can't get your projects approved through the planning department, they're never going to make it to building permit and finally to construction. We prepared a brief list of especially the long-range planning goals that we've are looking at currently and down the road, looking at general plan and local coastal plan update, downtown visioning, which is a specific plan, a zoning ordinance update, new sign ordinance, wireless ordinance, neighborhood compatibility standards, updating our CEQA guidelines. We have a required a greenhouse gas inventory and a preparation of a climate action plan. And an item that's on later on in the agenda, the Climate Action Plan Grant Administration to oversee that. In our planning department, the planning manager is not only responsible for her own planning duties, but also the day-to-day supervision of the building department with the reorganization and downsizing the department. Building was rolled into a combined building and planning division. In summary, it's an advantage to have consistent long-term employees. As a planner becomes more familiar with the city's municipal code, the general plan, and the city in general, they become a more valuable employee. And therefore, it's our recommendation that you authorize the hiring of a permanent employee at the assistant planner level. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions?
Yes.
No? No, Carla. Okay.
Oh, you want to go first? I have a couple questions about the intern position. Ms. Davis, who's been in that position, I believe, is that correct?
Yes, she's been here for almost a year,
okay,
I believe.
That was one question. And so, how does that pay rate compare to the proposed pay for the assistant planner?
I believe we're paying Ms. Davis at about $22 an hour. It would be a couple dollars an hour higher for the assistant planner position at the entry level step.
Plus benefits. Okay. And just for clarification, on that position, 30 years is $140,000, so it's actually more than the wastewater person, just for the math.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Lavick, I recognize the amount of time and familiarity that Ms. Davis has gathered with her time here so far, and I also know the competitiveness of that position and the concern that if we don't make this hire tonight, we would stand to risk potentially losing her to a better offer from another community. And I was wondering, in light of our previous discussion in the last item, do you have an idea about something we could do to help encourage her retention for the short term as we go through this negotiations that wouldn't involve stepping into the benefits side so we can begin to address those issues and feel good about that component?
As with any person graduating from the university, I think she's looking for a full-time employment, and she continues to seek full-time permanent employment. That is her goal, is to have some security, as much security as there is in jobs these days, with a position. She wants to make that professional investment in the community. I'm not saying that, if she left, the planning division would fall apart. No, of course not. We would try to find either another temporary employee or contract with a planning firm, as we have in the past. Unfortunately, contracting with a planning firm got very expensive very quickly. We were paying upwards in the neighborhood of about $9,000 a month for 25 hours worth of work. So, I wouldn't expect the current person in that position to guarantee us some time without being able to reciprocate that guarantee.
So how is there something we can do that would give us a better chance of maintaining that person for the long term with our decision tonight outside of hiring that person? Have you heard of anything that would help in that regard?
You mean like a major raise or something?
Something that would allow us to focus and address the benefit side before we go ahead and make another addition to the benefits. A raise or something along those lines. Nicer chair at her desk.
Let's see. We've upgraded the computer. The chair has been replaced. We moved offices around to make it a better working environment. I think it comes down to, I understand you're struggling with the whole benefits issue, but we are also struggling with trying to retain employees and get the work done, too.
Are you done, sir?
Actually, one more question to Ms. Luker. I know it's hard to anticipate, and it's at times impossible to anticipate changes. What do you foresee, though, with any other hires between now and outside of emergencies or unanticipated changes? Do we have any other hires that you see coming up between now and our next perhaps the indefinite time of negotiations that we are entering into?
That's a good question, and I'm telling everybody to hold tight. At this point, I do not know of any that are currently in the foreseeable future. Possibly a firefighter, although the firefighter and the police positions are both generally we don't come back to council for those safety positions. With the exception of those, and I don't see any foreseeable in the police, but we generally have vacancies there. I don't at this point see any other positions. I mean, I would love to tell you that between now and when we finish these contracts, we're not going to have anybody leave, and that is my hope, because we don't, as much as you don't like hearing from us coming back asking for positions, we hate to do it as well. But I don't know of any at this point.
I think I probably know the answer to this question, but if you do go into contract negotiations, can you make an arrangement where the benefits are retroactive to a certain date of hire? No. Okay, I didn't think so, but I thought it was worth asking. Betty, you had a question.
I think this is a clarification for me. You're asking for this position because it's, in essence, a promotion from an internship to a full-time position?
No, we would recruit to fill that position.
So this is not a guarantee for her?
Right. There is an obvious person that's going to apply that has the experience in the city of Morro Bay that is probably the candidate to beat. But we would advertise for this position, whether internally or externally. I'd have to discuss that with the city manager.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
I think it's important for the public at home to know, to say again, that this is a vacancy that was created in the department. It's not, again, not a new position.
Right. And I guess for my comment, okay. Are we doing comments?
Sure.
That I guess I would be more likely to vote for this if it was a promotion, knowing it was just going to be the same person that's just going to get other benefits because they've proven themselves. But to know that it could be anybody, then it really is a new position or a new person coming in. And so I guess I'm kind of leaning against that.
Let me clarify that. When we get the new, we eliminated all of our intern positions except for this one because we had an associate planner leave and we couldn't have one planner in the planning division. We will not have an intern there once we have the associate or assistant planner in that position. I'm not sure that based on our personnel rules we can promote a temporary employee into a permanent position without doing some sort of recruitment. I'll look to the city manager to answer that question.
Well, I think we actually can do that, but I'm pretty uncomfortable discussing that in this forum. I mean, at this point, our push is to get the best possible employee. I think Mr. Leivick hit the nail on the head when he said that our intern is certainly the position to the person to beat. She's got a year experience. She'll probably clearly have an outstanding interview. We may do an internal recruitment, but we... You know, I don't want to tie our hands. We haven't discussed it any further at this point.
So by saying that the internship will be gone, then we have two people in there now, and so when the assistant's hired, there will be no third person.
There will be two people in there when they leave, unless we can convince a city and regional planning student to work for free. That's the only interns that we're going to pursue at this point in time.
Thank you.
Okay, Rick, comment?
I think that the fact that you're so high on this particular person's a plus. I'll vote to authorize the hiring of the vacated position.
Noah?
Yeah, I just had another question in regards to intern. I realize we, the last budget session, voted against funding intern type positions, but is that an option that could carry us through till we're successful with our negotiations? Would that help address those issues of timing and responsiveness to permits and so on, and also give us some ability to start to develop someone in that role? So we had some options in the case that our number one decides that they have a better offer somewhere else.
What we really need is an experienced, although downclassing this to assistant planner, somewhat limited experienced person. We need somebody that can work independently, not require dated minute-to-minute direction. That's what happens. I mean, that's what happened with the current person when they first started here. They've gained that year's worth of experience. The person in that position, she can handle a project on her own. She has presented at both Planning Commission and City Council. It'll take about a year or two for somebody to gain that level of experience coming right out of college. So, yes, it is possible, but it's not my it wouldn't be my primary recommendation.
Yeah, I'm going to finish up my comments. It's really hard to vote for this position. I am aware of a number of potential businesses that have approached the city and are considering opening up business here. Even with the economy as it is, there are companies and entrepreneurs interested in taking advantage of some opportunities and with new ideas. And I've been concerned at times when I hear from a potential business that they were not as well received in the planning department as they were hoping, and felt that went into a decision to not open up business or not pursue it in Morro Bay, and that's not directed at your existing department, but through time as I've heard about these options and opportunities for the city. So I hear the concept of this position actually being something that helps support business. So I am very reluctantly going to vote for this position based on that concern and need.
Carla?
Well, I'm going to echo part of what Mr. Smuckler said, and I'm kind of surprised if, you know, for justifying hiring this position into a full-time position, because we need the help and we want to keep an experienced person. I'm still hearing comments from people in the community that are being challenged in trying to get things done through there, whether it's a timing, lack of personnel to do it all, or what the issue is. I'm not real sure if we're still trying to get back on track. It concerns me if it's a timing issue, that the personnel staff doesn't have enough time to get to everything, why, when we get to D5, that person would have signed on to take a task like that when we're already shorthanded as a lead agent. I think maybe there's some structuring of time that I'm not real comfortable with. I don't want to see anything not get done because we don't have a planner, so I'm going to support the position and hope that we address these benefits sooner rather than later.
Okay.
Follow-up, if possible. Yeah, along the lines of what you just mentioned, Ms. Borchardt, are there concerns that you have, Mr. Lifick, about how potential businesses are being received or things that we could do creatively to support your staff as far as liaisons with businesses through the chamber or whomever?
I think the current planning staff is making great strides in being more supportive. We did a major overhaul of our checklist system. Basically, we had no checklists up until, you know, a few months ago when, you know, we get people from other areas that have done this before and say, I can't believe that, you know, you don't have this in place. And I think that helps out greatly. I think having people there with good attitudes that want to be there and want to help is tremendous. And we have that now. I hate to say that, you know, in the past there may have been roadblocks put up, but I think there probably were. Maybe not intentionally, but there's a couple of ways you can find everything wrong with something, or you can help the person find the right way to do things, and that's what we're doing now. We're helping people find the correct way to approach their, whether it's a business, whether it's a construction project, anything that we process through the building industry and economic development there. We have that attitude now.
Okay. I too am going to support this. I think that, as has been said, there have been, ever since I was on the Planning Commission, there have been problems with the Planning Department in getting things done efficiently. It just seems to be a constant. It's not just us. I think it's part of being a small town and having a small staff. And sometimes your workload's really heavy, and sometimes it's not, but then you get all this state stuff you have to do. So it's a constant challenge. And I think to have a group that we have now that's working very positively together, as you just said, I think that's a really important point to acknowledge, and we need to encourage that. We need to keep that attitude going, and if we can do that, hopefully, with this candidate, I think that that's really important. And to have someone come in with a year of experience instead of somebody brand new that we have to start over with is vital at this point, given the requirements that we're going to have to be meeting for the state mandates and things like that. So I'm in favor of doing this as well. So, motion?
Can I make one more comment?
Sure.
You just said that this person, and my understanding is it's not a given that this position is
open. No, I know it's
okay.
Not.
That
and
this
I,
is going to be opened
you know,
up.
It would be nice if it was, but we'll see what happens. So no, I'm well aware of that.
Motion to approve D2.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, second from
aye.
Noah. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Thank you. Okay, item D3. This is a review of the draft amendment adding a landmark tree section and approval of a revised master street tree list. Mr. Levick.
I'm going to pass out a slight revision to one of the attachments that includes a new definition.
Okay.
Bear with me for just a second here.
Thank you.
excuse that. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
This item is two actions, actually. It's modifying our master street tree list, and then a draft revision to Chapter 12.08, the Morro Bay Municipal Code, adding a landmark tree section to that code. Just want to echo the public comment that thank the Citizens Tree Committee for all the good hard work they did in both the master's tree list and the landmark tree section. I'm not going to name people because I'm afraid I'll forget some. There are the principal folks that have been to most of the meetings listed in the staff report. The master street tree list is revised to make it much more simpler and look at available trees and those trees that are appropriate for planting in the public right-of-way. So you can see that it's a much smaller list. Both the master street tree list has gone to the Public Works Advisory Board and the Planning Commission. The Public Works Advisory Board forwarded on to Planning Commission without any changes. The Planning Commission did recommend removal of the Mexican fan palm from the master street tree list and removal of the blue gum eucalyptus from the open space and parks list. I want to point out that everything but the master street tree list are advisory type lists. They're just good ideas is really all they are. Is the tree committee really looked at trees that were appropriate for our climate, our soil types, and their relative availability in this area. So the only list, which is as attachment 4, is the regulatory list.
Mr. Leivick, for those at home, again, that is the public right-of-way list, public property that the
yes,
city is managing.
Yes, it's basically only the public right-of-way. The public property, parks, and open space is not regulated under Chapter 12.08. It's only that street right-of-way that is regulated under 12.08. So it'd be that section that is basically people's frontage in between the street itself and their property line where you would plant a street tree or where street trees already exist. That concludes kind of the street tree section. I can take questions now on this portion or move on to the landmark tree.
What's your preference? Move on?
I'd like to see, because open space, I'm not sure, I know we have zoning for open space. I don't know that that's privately owned. Isn't it publicly owned? And certainly the parks are publicly owned. And I'm wondering why we don't pull that into the ordinance. In other words, have list to be mandatory. But more than that, back in this ordinance, have it in there as well. And I know Mr. Woods doesn't like me interfering with his parks, but they are public parks.
Well, I guess I don't know what bothers Mr. Woods or what doesn't bother Mr. Woods, but I would, for this chapter, 12.08, city tree regulations, the purpose is just for in or within the public right-of-way.
So if we wanted to bring in public trees, like public parks, you would put it in a different place, or would you put it under this ordinance?
You could probably do it in this, but we'd have to look at it then in that, and whether it belongs here or changing just the purpose. It could be you could just change the purpose, but I believe right now all we're dealing with is just the right-of-way trees.
So that's a future question.
This could be expanded, or it could be separate. It might be something that we need to look at as to whether other cities have tried to do it within their right-of-way ordinance or done a separate, and I'm looking at Rob, maybe he would know what some of the other cities have done and whether they've done a separate one. They always do private trees as a separate one.
Right.
But for public trees, do they sometimes try to separate out a different ordinance, the difference between right-of-way and parks or open space? But I think the changes that were being proposed to tonight are just the right-of-way.
That's correct. And there's many tree ordinances across the state and country. I am probably most familiar with the City of San Luis Obispo's tree ordinance, and they regulate everything under their one section of the tree ordinance. They have a separate section for trees on private property, which would also be their parks and open space trees, and then trees within the right-of-way is contained all within one section of their code.
Okay. So I understand that we're only dealing with two parts tonight, the definitions and then the list, but we can come back and talk about that other later. Okay. And, in fact, I had other issues about the ordinance itself, but that's to come back later. Okay.
Other questions? I had just one, and that was the eucalyptus blue gum. Is that the one that's currently on Morobe Boulevard that drops all the pods?
No, that's the eucalyptus ficifolia. The blue gum is the large. See, okay. I'm becoming a tree person here. As we speak. The blue gum eucalyptus, and I don't know the scientific name for that, is the large eucalyptus, okay. The ones you see by the fire station,
okay.
At
Park.
South in state parks. Yeah, that's that eucalyptus. So,
right. Is the one that drops the pods still on the list?
For open space only.
For open space only,
not on trees.
Not in
not
the
not
right
on
of way.
Okay. That's I want to make sure that has been such a
well. That's a discussion. I'd like to discuss that later.
Well, no, I just don't want to create any more of them. That's what I was concerned about on streets. So that's fine. Okay.
Actually, it is on the open space and parks list, which is a guideline list.
Would
but
that as streets, along
it is not streets? On the okay. Tree list. We would be omitting it from there. The tree committees. Thought process was that the red flowering eucalyptus has a special place in the history of our town, but there are many issues that they cause in that that sort of an application within the street plantings as far as below ground sidewalk impacts and then sky
tree,
impacts.
Just where we put it, yeah.
So the tree committee talked about that quite extensively and decided parks is a place where they could fit in and not have those same sort of impacts that we're seeing within the street tree plantings.
Right. Okay, thank you. Other questions? All right.
Actually, quick question. Mr. Livek, if you could go into a little bit how if in a certain situation if someone wanted to lobby to have an alternative tree from the list approved, there is a process there. And
Basically, the code already defines that if somebody has a particular tree that they like that's not on our list, they can submit it to the city engineer for approval, and I'll sit next door here and put on my city engineer hat, and I would evaluate that for its impact to the surrounding infrastructure and see how big it gets, what size, typically what size roots it would get, see if it's going to be an impact to the sidewalk or the curb, make sure it's not dropping a whole bunch of fruit on the ground. And
what section is that in? I did not see that. Is it just in the appeal section in terms of a general decision that you might make?
I believe so.
So it's an assumed position there?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
It's actually in under the master tree list, 12.08.040. It's the last paragraph there. Written permit from the Director of Public Services.
And so that's just, but I thought your question was how to add another name to the list rather than just a specific tree in a specific location.
No, I was talking specifically about an alternative tree that wasn't currently on the list. As far as the list goes, the tree committee generally feels
that's kind of crazy to me. So is there anything in here that encourages that kind of thought?
No, that was just
I want to make that very, very clear. I think that's a bad way to go when you're talking about what trees people can do on their own property. So I'll go along with it as it is. That last sentence is bothersome to me.
Mr. Grantham, rest assured we have a very active democratic process at the tree committee level. Debates are very strong. We have people from all different aspects and elements of that discussion involved, which is
purposeful. We really want to make sure we vet these ideas and don't come at it from one train of thought. So I guarantee you, if we bring forward a recommendation from regarding public or private property, that it's going to be tempered by your perspective.
Okay. Continue, Mr. Leibig.
Moving on to landmark trees, there's been a community desire to recognize certain trees for their particular value, be it a specimen tree of a particular type or its location, or it's associated with a historic figure or place within the community. And so that's where we're modifying Chapter 12.8 to recognize, establish a process to recognize those landmark trees within the community. And it would recognize, you know, trees within the city limits, so designated by city council after review of the Public Works Advisory Board. It could be a unique tree or grove. The tree committee thought that there should be about 20 trees, seemed like a reasonable amount in the city of Morro Bay that would be landmark trees. And then there would be some additional costs for these landmark trees, because once they're established as landmark trees, we would want to proactively look at the maintenance and health of those trees to preserve them for the long term. So I've estimated probably, depending on the variety, could add, you know, $1,000 to $4,000 per tree, you know, over about a 10-year period for enhanced pruning, or there might be some, for example, in the north end of town, we had some problems with scale on a few trees up there, so we did a systemic treatment to get rid of that scale, because there wasn't a whole lot of air circulation where the trees were located. Things like that we would go out and, you know, maintain. These trees would be considered by the community to have special value. Therefore, we need to, I guess, respect those trees even more than we would the rest of our city street trees. Some examples of that could be considered for landmark status are the Monterey cypress and the blue gum eucalyptus. There that tree is again, around the Cloisters area, in the area of San Jacinto sandalwood, the palms on Monterey and Morro Bay Boulevard, the site of the original post office, Monterey pines on Piney, that were from the original pines planted by Parker, and those specimen, those beautiful Channel Island oaks that are adjacent to the library courtyard now near the Peace Pole there. So those would be examples of types of trees that could be considered for landmark tree status. That concludes the presentation on the landmark tree section. I'd be well, let me just add, we did add a definition to the tree section. That's what I, the landmark tree section, and that's what I passed out, to define that specimen tree. And it's a tree that obviously belongs to a particular category, but is a particular interest due to individual distinguishing characteristics such as color, texture, scent, or other pleasures it provides. And I stole most of that definition from the Arbor Day Foundation's glossary.
Okay, questions on this section?
I do. Mr. Leivik, if this is approved, what would you see the process for a nomination of that tree?
you know, that typically isn't flushed out in the ordinance. That would be procedures that we would develop based on, you know, approval of this ordinance change. And point out, this is a draft ordinance. We still need to bring it back for first and second reading before it's enacted.
Anything else? Okay. Does that conclude everything?
That concludes my presentation. Okay. We're looking for a couple of different actions. We're looking for a direction to move the landmark tree section on and for the next available city council meeting for first reading, and we're looking for city council to approve the master tree list based on recommendations from our Public Works Advisory Board and our Planning Commission.
I would like to discuss that list.
Okay.
Is this the time?
Go right ahead.
Yes. I have a concern about eliminating the blue gum eucalyptus from open space and park area because that's what dominates our state park. And it is within our boundaries, and though they have their own governing rules, I don't think we want to give them the idea that we want to get rid of those trees. And this kind of implies that. And they do well in open space, and they're, you know, they dominate for our monarchs. We would not have monarchs here if it was not for our eucalyptus, the few that we have left. And so I'd like to make a plea that that blue gum be stayed on the volunteer open space and park list. The other tree that I think needs to be in there is the Monterey pine, which has gone through a series of diseases, and those that are left now have some resilience. And I took the liberty of writing to Richard Hawley, who's the president of Green Space in Cambria, because he was a member of the state board that tried to come up with a variety that would be hardy enough to resist that disease.
Yeah.
And they did. And this was his response. And I said, I said in my email, you know, we're considering this list. What do you think about the Monterey pine in particular? Because that was the focus of your state committee. He said, I think it's very important to keep the Monterey pine planted in Morro Bay City, as these trees are part of your identity and they have an ecological value for certain species, including the monarchs, migratory songbirds, habitat for bats and other mammals, use for cavity nesting animals, and then just plain aesthetic value. And the thing that brings them home, as well as with the eucalyptus, is this characteristic. When the fog comes in, they produce what's called fog drip, and it benefits the plants that grow under them, under the canopy, and they drip the water in the trees during the dry season. So it not only helps the trees, but it helps the monarchs when they're here nesting to have that moisture. He said that they have got clone trees, and they've got seedlings, and that they would be willing to sell them to us for a very cheap price, $7.50, if we order, you know, under 20 and whatever, you know, his. But if you wanted a non-cloned Monterey tree, that's and he says you could put the clones here because you're not in a natural Monterey forest. And so you would not want to put those there, but because this is not. But he also has a series of native trees that he has gathered seeds from in the area between in San Luis County that we could use as well, and he'd be glad to help us with those. So I think it's real important that we maintain the Monterey pine and the blue gum eucalyptus on list two for open space and parks.
Ms. Winholtz, would you mind commenting directly to his comments about the varieties that he's working with and their resistance to the pine pitch canker and the other diseases?
It's strictly the Monterey pine.
And he's suggesting that they have strains now that are demonstrating good performance and resistance.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And I actually...
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say there, I'm sure, you know, I went to a talk several years ago when Dr. Mark Ritter was speaking at the Botanical Center, mm-hmm. and it was on eucalyptus, and he says there's literally hundreds, because this was his dissertation was on eucalyptus, if you can believe it, and he says there's literally hundreds of varieties, and we have, I think it's something like 27 in the county, and maybe Half a dozen of those are very common, like the bottle brush and the blue gum. So I'm a little concerned that we're doing this list without having talked to someone like him, unless you think your committee has, that we're not going to include some of these traditional or even special eucalyptus, again, in the park and open space list. And maybe that can be brought back for the first reading. Or something, but I like that the street tree list is very narrow. I think that's great, but I think in the other areas,
we do not have on that list, and it is obviously a good performer for us. So, in our motion, I'd like to include those. Dr. Ritter wasn't consulted directly in our list. We could reach out to him. I wouldn't want to pull the process back on this, especially because for the open space, that still remains as a guideline list. And I think we could perhaps have him in and talk to him more and include our parks department in that so they're aware of the options. And what I like about this is that it still leaves very much the flexibility to make choices that aren't directly coming from this list. And with that in mind, I think the option of the blue gum, to have it there just so you don't forget about it completely, in a certain situation, it might be an excellent choice, especially because of the historical component to our community.
Well, I think that what worries me about eliminating some trees from the list is that will we get to the point where we think, well, they're not on our list, so it's okay to go ahead and cut them down? You know, that they're not going to be valued, you know, because we're not going to be here, you know, 5 years, 10 years. That and all the flowering eucalyptus that line Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street right now, and they're just coming into their flowering season. I think, and I know the trouble that they cause shopkeepers and others, but it's the most incredible look when you're at the top of Morro Bay Boulevard and you see this row of red ribbon on either side of you, and there's the blue ocean. I mean, it's just, you can't find a more stunning picture than to see that. And so if we start to say, oh, well, it's not on our list and we're taking it off, and, well, if this one looks a little bit sick, let's just take it out because it's not on the list. I am sensitive to how we might abuse the lack of names on the list. And I
would
don't
just
know
say
how to prevent that.
The view of those trees when you're lying on the sidewalk looking up because you slipped on one of the pods is a little less
Well, then
attractive.
I would bring that to the shopkeeper.
No, but I know.
Traditionally, they're
said,
in charge
Betty,
of the sidewalk.
We've already said that it's not going to be on the street tree
right,
list,
and I understand.
Which is fine. And I totally
agree
with that.
But I want to bring up this concern I have, whether
I
it's about the bottle brush or the blue gum,
okay,
that these trees not start, because they are historical to this
okay
area.
Okay.
And
I've got a question. Why was the blue gum eliminated by the Planning Commission? What was their reasoning?
They talked about non-native trees, that we don't have any problem with not enough blue gum eucalyptus in this area, and they're going to probably continue to self-propagate, but we don't want to encourage people to plant any more of them.
Okay. And thank you, because that's how I feel about that. So we'll discuss that issue. Let's go on to this end of the table. And
quick comment to follow up. Just knowing our budget situation for our urban forest, I don't see us having the resources to actually go out and make those changes as far as cutting down trees that aren't on the list, especially healthy trees. And I think it's important that you bring it up, because the other challenge that we have is, as we realize we're going to see a transition with our urban forest, as our mass planting of the red flowering eucalyptus, for instance, begins to evolve and pass on, we need to make sure that we have a canopy tree growing into our downtown district and filling that need. And so that's going to take years to accomplish. And so the importance of maintaining our existing canopy is there and recognized from the tree committee side. And I think it's important that you bring it up so we realize that overnight we're not going to try mm-hmm. We're not going to think that this is going to be something that can happen instantly.
But what is
okay
happening,
Betty?
please. Let Carla have some time to talk, okay? Carla, comments?
My turn. I forgot. I have a question, maybe I didn't hear when you said on the landmark trees there should be less than 20 types of trees or 20 trees total?
I think the tree committee was thinking 20 trees total would be a reasonable number of landmark trees. I think that was based on the number that are in San Luis Obispo was somewhere around in the 20 or 30 neighborhood. So they didn't envision Morro Bay having more than that.
Yeah, the thought was San Luis, I believe, has 22 or 23, and we were using that as an example because of the size of San Luis. We would expect that there would be much less than that.
But could I respond?
Please let Carla finish. We will give you.
I wanted to ask her a question. Trees, in addition to individual trees spotted around, the example being the row over by the elementary school, another being the row on the Caratan Bluff above Tidelands, another one being South Main Street, actually, as you leave Olive and you go down towards the state park. So I would not want to limit it, and I know it's just a guideline because it's not in the ordinance, but I would hope we would not limit it to just 20 trees, but tree or grove.
Was there a question there?
Well, yeah, so how do you feel about that?
I have a concern about, that's one of the words in here was grove, and so that concerns me about the cost, and I don't know that those are the eucalyptus trees you're talking about over by the school are on the school grounds and on private property. They're not on city property.
As an example of a row of trees. So another example would be the row on Main Street or the row on the bluff. I was just trying to think of where there were rows.
I'm not a huge eucalyptus fan in the first place. I love them. I agree. They look beautiful, but they're shallow-rooted, and they're lifting up all our sidewalks, which is costing us more than the $400 a year to maintain.
Then the row of pines that go up Piney Way.
I like pines.
Okay. Rick has a question.
I think this is probably for Mr. Schultz. Would the adoption of this have any bearing on the ability of potential future buyers of our property that's for sale regarding the eucalyptuses that are on that property?
Because they haven't been designated yet, probably not.
Well, I mean, if we go ahead and adopt, is it going to put up roadblocks for a potential buyer for that property?
Well, they haven't been designated as landmarks yet, but if they were, then it could potentially.
And I think that's an important thing to recall is that for any selection of a landmark tree through the PUAB process and then ultimately coming to council, you would have those details and be able to make that decision knowing what sort of impacts that decision could have.
Okay, so it's not going to impact our ability to sell that property. Is that's my question.
As we stand right now, it would not affect, I don't believe it would affect the purchase price at all. I mean, we've already have. The reason why I hesitate is, I mean, there are concerns with that property and the sale of it because they want to make certain that those trees, some of them can be removed. And if you remember, we went through the process, there was approximately, I want to say 16 of them that were allowed to be removed, and some of them had to remain. But there's always questions about could they remove the remaining ones, because they could impede development. And so as we stand right now, we tell them you have to go through that process to see if they'd be removed. Well, if they were designated landmark, then obviously they're entitled to protection and they couldn't be removed and might affect the price later on down the line. Does that answer your question? Because it's already problematic. When you ask what would affect the value, as we sit here today, that's one of the problems with that property.
Right.
Is the trees.
I don't want to do anything to further inhibit our ability to.
And I would say that. Not by making these changes until you actually designated them as landmark trees would it then have a further effect on the property value.
Thank you.
Okay. Another thing just to point out pretty quickly is that a landmark tree would also have its limits as to the amount of resources we would put into a tree. That obviously, every tree has as an expiration point, and it would be important for that to be kept in mind. And the city, I think, retains the ability to say,
at some point, we cannot afford to, or we don't want to try to resuscitate a tree that is obviously moving through its lifespan and becoming more of a liability than it's worth to maintain, even recognizing the landmark tree status.
Well, I have to say that I'm in agreement with removing the blue gum eucalyptus. I think it does create problems, and it's not native. However, I do like the idea of including the Monterey pine, because those, they definitely are beautiful, but they have to be in the right place.
Are you talking on the mandatory list now or the list two?
The one, I don't know, which one were they going to eliminate it from? That's the one I want to eliminate it from.
The first list is the master street tree list. That is the only list with regulatory authority. The other lists, the private open space list and the Greywater private residence list, those are just suggestions of trees that do particularly well in this climate and have the tree committee viewed them to have some value.
I'm upholding the Planning Commission's removal of that particular tree, is what I'm saying. I do like the pines. I know they just, we have to be really careful where we put them because they are creating definite problems as they age where they are now. The street in front of my neighbor is all torn up because of that tree, and it's coning badly and probably going to be dead in a couple of
attacks because of the eucalyptus.
And the golf course?
Yes.
I thought it was in the park.
No. The golf course is in the park, and that's.
I mean, I know, but the park.
No, it's the campground site. It doesn't exist anymore because they damaged it too much.
I uphold the Planning Commission's recommendation on that.
That wouldn't be part of our review anyway. If that's county, would it?
Yeah. No, they come to us because they're inside our city limits, and they did come to us. And they did talk to us about trees.
Okay, are we ready for a motion?
I'll make the motion that we accept the changes to the ordinance as presented to us with the addition of the definition of specimen tree for item number H, and that to the the mandatory list be as is, and that the second list include the Monterey pine and the blue gum eucalyptus. How about if I... Yes.
Do I hear a second? Motion dies for last of a second. All right. Another motion?
Same motion, less the blue gum tree.
Okay.
Actually.
Okay, then I need to make one more comment. We're a bird city. We're a tree city. And you're wanting to eliminate the tree from our parks and open space, not eliminate because it's suggestive, but we are sending the message that we want to eliminate habitat in our open space and in our parks that currently provide migratory birds and monarchs habitat.
Okay.
And right. Is that, am I hearing that right? You are all comfortable with that?
Any other comments?
I would really like some answers.
I would actually.
Do we not honor the trees and the city and the bird status of our community?
I had an amendment I'd like to request to your.
Was there a second?
Yes, there was. Yeah, Rick seconded it. Okay, we're still in discussion.
The amendment was the point that you raised, Ms. Winholtz, about the Monterey pine is a good one, and on the master list, it currently doesn't exist. Request that that is included in the master list, so that option
it
is
was.
There.
Yeah. I didn't
hear that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was the same.
The other thing, which isn't all that important because it's a guideline only, but that we do include the addition of the Quercus agrifolia and Tomentilla to the private residence list. That's the Channel Island oak and the live oak. And I can give you
the
that
oaks,
information.
I would be more than willing to amend my motion to include the two oaks on the voluntary list.
Thank you. I will.
Do you agree with a second? Okay. Bridget, we will get those names to you.
Yeah.
I promise. Any more discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. 4-1, Ms. Winholtz opposed. All right. Moving on to D4, request to approve a response to the grand jury regarding solar energy.
I'm just a little disappointed because I don't get to say ficifolia as many times as Mr. Livick. But I will tell you that this is the third request from the grand jury that we've received this year, and we, on June 22nd of this year, we received a report prepared by the grand jury entitled To Go Solar or Not to Go Solar. And as you're aware, the grand jury generally, in their reports, identifies findings as well as recommendations and then requests the city of Morro Bay to respond to those. And I'll just call out, the grand jury requested that we respond to two of their findings. Finding number two, which was many government buildings, parking structures, and schools are candidates for rooftop solar. And we've responded to that finding and saying that we do agree with this statement, but that each governmental building, parking structure, and school is unique, and oftentimes, especially in a city of our size, with multiple government buildings, which are small in design, sometimes it makes more sense to do energy retrofits rather than rooftop solar. The second finding that the grand jury requested that we respond to was the first steps towards energy efficiency should start with retrofit of pre-1990 homes and buildings. And we responded that we agreed with the statement and provided an example that the Morro Bay Community Center, which was built and finished in 1989, was partially retrofitted with a solar array in 1999 and is currently under retrofitting for lighting, refrigeration, heating, venting, and air conditioning. Other city buildings built prior to 1990 include the City Hall, Harbor, Corporate Yard, Police Station, Vets Memorial Building, and Library, and certainly each of those buildings would benefit from an energy retrofit. The grand jury, along with their findings, requested that we responded to three recommendations. Recommendation number one was the County Board of Supervisors and City Councils of all the cities, incorporated cities, should actively promote and implement AB 811 retrofit and rooftop solar. We responded that we agreed with this recommendation and that we currently participate on a countywide steering committee for AB 811. They also recommend.
I had one additional comment for the recommendation number two, and that is that Channel 20 runs title cards all the time about energy conservation and efficiency, and I think that that should be noted because that's something that's out there on our public access mm-hmm. all the time and very informative. So that we should get points for. Any comments or questions?
Just one. The thin film solar is what, 50% of effective as regular solar paneling, or how effective is it compared to regular solar?
I'll defer to Mr. Woods on that question. He probably has more expertise there.
Now, could you repeat the question? What type
of
solar?
Yeah, that thin film solar that's so much less costly than the solar panels.
I don't have a good answer for you.
It's on page. I'm sorry. It's under cost of installation, page 12. It refers to the thin film solar. That kind of production is on the rise, and they're using it a lot more because it's so much more cost effective. But it's not as effective as a solar panel or.
No, I have not had any experience with the thin, and I need to hesitate and not answer. I'm sorry.
I'm just wondering if that might be something that we would consider using on the smaller buildings.
Yeah, along those lines, I had concern because I think the letter does a good job of recognizing that it may be cost prohibitive to install on the smaller buildings. But if we were to have something in there that says if we see the benefits and the cost return for an investment of solar on those buildings, we would certainly consider doing so. It seems like we're resisting that idea or evaluating that option the way the letter ends as far as we're going to finish with the retrofits. Just in that one item, I know we mentioned that we're going to consider those costs in other items, but it might be good to say after those retrofits, we'd consider solar if it looked appropriate.
We can certainly add that. The intent wasn't to be not
no.
putting solar arms around it. So that's you're specifically talking about recommendation three.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We can add something to that effect.
Recognizing that we have small roofs, if technology improves to the point where that's effective, we'd do that too.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments?
Another is just a simple grammatical adjustment there in number four. The first sentence after one example, we've retrofitted with the solar array in 1999 and is currently under retrofitting. That's I think it might need to be undergoing retrofitting.
Or being retrofitted.
Yeah, being retrofitted might be better. And I don't know if we, we've backed up our statements very well with our actions, but we are also still, as far as I understand, participating with Soil Green Build and are promoting their services to applicants. That could be an additional factor in there.
Mm-hmm. My only comment would be about the dates of the letter, and I assume those will be updated. Both the one within the paragraph as well as at the top of the page.
Mm. Good.
Absolutely. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else? Then I move that we authorize this letter to be sent as
second.
Corrected or amended.
Okay.
All right. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, item D5, authorization for the city to act as the lead applicant for the Joint Sustainable Communities Planning Grant for the grant application entitled Small Cities of San Luis Obispo County Climate Action Plan. And I assume that since Kathleen is not here, this is you, Mr.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, I will take this one. We've been working with the other small cities within the county together regarding our climate action plan preparation. As part of that work effort, we discovered that there was a Prop 84 grant available to help us fund these climate action plans for the greenhouse gas initiative. The city of Paso Robles had intended on being the lead agency for that grant. They also applied for a grant for another project through Prop 84 for another project in the city of Paso. They were told that they cannot be lead agency on two grants in the same cycle from the same pot of money. In order to expedite the grant application that was due prior to this coming to council, we discussed it among staff and their sources of missions. This is a work effort that we, with or without the grant money, we're going to need to perform. And it was the consensus of the steering committee that Morro Bay should act as lead agency. This committee is made up of all the cities in the county, with the exception of the city of San Luis Obispo and the county of San Luis Obispo. They got their funding through another program for larger communities. So that's how we got to this point. And that concludes my summary of this staff report, and happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Rick?
Is that grant money split evenly between the cities?
No, it's based on population, okay, with the extra amount coming to the city that would administer the grant.
And what's the total of that grant?
Approximately $600,000, but the vast majority of it is going to be paying a consultant to prepare this climate action plan that all the cities are going to be able to use.
Other questions?
Mr. Levick, do you anticipate the funds that would be earmarked for the lead agency or community would cover our costs internally that we wouldn't be losing?
Yes. The city of Paso did a great job in estimating the cost, they believe, to administer their grant, because they were going down the path of taking on that role. We've reviewed their estimates and believe it's sufficient to oversee that grant.
Thanks.
Carter?
Thank you. I have a question. Could you clarify on the letter that would go on this for Prop 84, the resolution? On number 3, it says, certifies that the city of Morro Bay will have sufficient funds to develop the proposal or will secure the resources. Is that in some way, shape, or form holding us to the cost of something? Am I in it?
It actually, the proposal has already gone in.
Yeah.
It's already been prepared. This language is requirements of the grant. So we've already committed the resources and have prepared the proposal for that grant activity. As part of the steering committee, all the cities work together on that proposal for that grant. It's already been accomplished, that task.
My next question, I just wasn't sure the way I read that, I guess. How is this going to proceed come November if Prop 22 or 23 or whatever it is suspends AB 32? What happens with all this at that point then?
If Prop 32 is suspended, I would suspect that everybody's going to stop work on their climate action plan and greenhouse gas initiatives, and we'll probably be giving that money back to the state that was being used for those purposes.
So we wouldn't have, I mean, I'm just concerned that we're starting this, that all the cities are before the election in November that could potentially suspend it.
Yes, but if we don't get started now, we won't meet the timelines that if it doesn't get suspended, that we'll have to meet. And
the timeline of 2020?
The timeline of the grant application.
Oh, the grant application. I thought you meant of the mandate.
No, I'm sorry.
Other questions? Comments?
Motion.
Betty?
I'll make a comment after the motion if Mr. Grantham wants to make a motion.
Move approval of D5.
Second. All right. Discussion? Betty?
I just think it's clever that Morro Bay would step up to the plate and get the little bit of extra money and actually step out in the county situation and take a lead role.
I totally agree. I think it's a great thing for us to do, to be more involved with the other cities. We often isolate ourselves because we are so isolated physically, and I think this is a really good thing to be doing. So
I guess one last question. If this is suspended, then all the staff time that we're putting in this is basically just...
It would be lost.
Okay.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right. You want to take a quick break or you want to keep going?
We're almost done.
All right. Let's go for D6. Discussion on amending council policies and procedures in regard to calling closed session, real property contracts going to closed session prior to open session, council liaisons to advisory boards, and city council input on hiring and evaluation of department heads. Rob and Andrea, is this a two-person presentation?
Two-person presentation. We both worked on this to get a draft of any real property negotiations prior to hearing it, and so we've put language in there in 4.2.8. Another section that we've worked on has to do with your council liaison assignments. There was really nothing in your current policies that discussed that, so we've taken language in there to explain that you have now incorporated and are doing in 6.2. And then the last one was putting into your council policies and procedures a section under 5.5 regarding the input on hiring and evaluation of department heads. I see a typo in evaluation. And with that, we'll open it up for discussion or any changes. And then if it's approved, we would bring it back with a formal resolution.
Okay. I'm going to start on this one. I just had a couple of things that I would like to add, being the one who brought the whole liaison idea forward. On 6.2.1, the second paragraph with the red line, I'd like to, 1, 2, 3, the fourth line down where it starts assignment, members, I'd like to change the wording to read, members should either attend commission meetings or watch the meeting broadcasts and maintain communication with a commission chair on a regular basis. Saying elect to makes it really vague, and I just want our council members to understand that this is an obligation to be in contact with this board or commission. So that would be my suggestion there. And then on page 3, 6.3.3.3, I would add advisory boards will provide quarterly written or oral reports to the city council on a rotating member basis. I think we can take it either way if they would prefer doing a group advisory board written report, that's fine with me, I would think. Or if they want someone to come and orally present it, or both. They could do it both ways. So I would suggest those two additions. Other comments?
Well, since you had two additions, I'd like a deletion.
Okay.
On 5.5.1, on hiring the first paragraph, to me that elicits thoughts of micromanagement. And, you know, it's a city manager's job to hire the department heads. If somebody screws up, then we see the city manager about it. But to me, this looks like, you know, part of the hiring process, which we're not. And I'd hate for it to turn into something like that. But to go to an informal social setting to meet the top candidates and give your comments and input regarding your decisions to the city manager, that's not our job. It's the job of the city manager to hire the department heads and control the department. So I don't like that.
It's what we did with Chief DeRohan, did you not? I mean,
well,
that's
the way I feel
okay.
about it.
Okay.
So.
Is that the only thing?
Yeah, I can go along with everything else. It's fine. It's just I don't like the precedent. It's not a precedent because it's been done, so it is a precedent. But it just doesn't sit right with me.
Betty?
I'd like to go back to the closed session meetings at the top of page 2 and make a case for it not to be the majority, because closed sessions are not special meetings. And as typical of this council or other councils, often there's a 3-2 minority and majority. And one of the reasons we changed open session language in here was so that the minority could get their items on the agenda in the open sessions. And I don't believe if we make this have to be 3, then the minority never has a chance to bring a topic to closed session. And closed session is not a special meeting in my mind, so I would prefer that majority be changed to 2, maybe called by 2 of the council. Also under 4.2.8.1, right underneath it, where it says prior to any final closed session on real property, and that's great, but there's nowhere in here, Mr. Schultz, where it says that it has to come to closed session before it comes to open session. And I think that was the point when I suggested it, that I'd like for it to be mandatory that real property has to come to closed session before it comes to open session. So maybe a sentence or some tweak could be added there. Under 6... Excuse me.
Let's let him respond.
We certainly can do that. I think there are some very exceptions, you know, that are routine, but as long as you're fine with that going to closed. I mean, there are sometimes just subleases or assignments that are very, very routine that we don't bring to closed. And if you're saying all real property,
and then you could just
comes.
Say non-routine. I think you could define that.
Mm-hmm. Real property transactions will be presented in closed session before open. And if it gets too onerous, then we can go back and change it. Go that way, then for staff to start to decide, is it, you know.
Yeah, I don't want you to have to make those decisions.
Some is routine, but to one person, routine might not be another one. And with other councils, they might see it differently. So I'd rather we'll just make that commitment to bring all real property, whether it's in your subleases or some of the ones that seem more routine, we'll still bring them to touch base with you in closed session before bringing it to open.
And you have in the past, some of them, not all of them.
Yeah.
And then, so you're going to use the word shall? Okay. And then under 6.2.1, the first line where it says the mayor should have discretion to assign individuals, I believe that the mayor assigns non-city appointments, and that the few that are within the city is actually done by the council as a whole, mm-hmm. And that this should not read the mayor, but should read the city council.
Oh, for the liaison positions.
No, I'm under 6.2.1.
Right.
Yes, council liaison. Yes.
It was kind of interesting. That first sentence actually was not a change. I mean, that was in your... Mm-hmm. But I did notice whether you would want that to continue on or whether the council would decide.
Well, that's a different issue. That's regarding county, SLOCOG,
no.
Wastewater.
Right, that's a total different section where the mayor says, but under this section, we only had one sentence that really just said, the mayor shall, at its discretion, to assign individual members of council to a liaison role with community organizations or events. It really doesn't have anything to do with your advisory, but it was the best place we could put it in there. Do you want to eliminate that sentence maybe altogether? When do you ever appoint someone to be?
Yeah, I mean, the way we did it was who wants to do what, and we. Mm-hmm.
But this is for organization. This isn't for all the different subcommittees.
Right. This is just for the subcommittee.
No, this sentence is dealing with
everything.
Community organizations or events. It's not even dealing with your other section in your policies that talks about the committees like SLOCOG.
Right, I know. It's just about the liaisons to the advisory boards, right?
Well, the first sentence really is talking about community organizations or events, which I'm not sure we've ever done. You've never appointed someone to the Margarita Festival.
No.
Yeah. So I'm not sure it's
so
even.
You're recommending
I'm not even sure it's applicable.
I'll continue my recommendation to do the guacamole judging.
So I'm not even sure the first sentence is applicable.
I don't think it is.
And
I
it
really
was
don't.
Existing. I think I'm not sure the council clear on that. The black sentence was existing in your policies and procedures, so that was already there.
Okay.
We may not have ever used it, but it was there.
Okay.
And we're trying to figure out where to put this section. And this made the most sense, but you still might want to amend that first sentence that's in black.
Then I would suggest that we eliminate the sentence in black and start with where it says a council liaison shall, that the city council shall appoint a council liaison.
Right.
But at that point, then we can say who's responsible for the appointment.
Right. So if it comes to two people want the same one, whoever gets the majority vote.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I would speak in opposition to Mr. Grantham's desire to eliminate that first paragraph under hiring. I think it was informative to the council members as well as whether he wanted it or not to the city manager to get that feedback. And he expressed appreciation whether he did what we said. And it wasn't a group decision. It was individual feedback. And I think it's good for council to know what kind of candidates are out there, what kind of personality or persons may be coming to us. And, when you have five eyes as opposed to one eye, you'll see things that others may not see. So I think it's really valuable to have that where it's required. There's no demand on the city manager to have to do anything that, is suggested, but it's merely to have this
informal.
Yes, this informal comment as feedback.
Okay. All right, Noah?
Yeah.
Now, we have a couple of things on the table now. The hiring thing, I think we're all in agreement about eliminating that first sentence under 621.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's cool. And I think we all agreed with my additions. As far as the action on the liaisons?
Not yet.
Okay. All right. I didn't know. So we've got that. We've got how many people can call a closed session and the hiring comments. So please address those, Noah.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Wait.
Madam Mayor, did you comment on 4281 where we shall have...
Okay. Did we have consensus on that we all wanted the real property things to come to us? Yes? Okay. Yes. So we have consensus on that one. Okay. Noah.
Okay, with the hiring for the department heads, I agree with Ms. Winholtz. That's was that it? I think I've addressed it.
Just my comments about
attending
the commission meetings or watching the broadcast.
Yeah, I think that's important. That's a really essential role that we're playing. The feedback we've received and so far the experiences have shown that that's something we need to continue to do and expect of a council member.
Okay, Carla.
A future agenda items is three people, isn't it?
You could do it can be two people if you produce your own report.
Otherwise, three.
Right.
Okay. I'm in favor of a majority for a closed session. I know when I was interested in an issue, I was able to get enough support to do that. So I'm fine with it the way it is, a majority. And the additions you did, that was fine. The reason why I said on the council liaison is that I didn't have a problem with the language the way it was. I know you want something a little stronger, but for me, and you know, I would just say for others, we have two council meetings plus our special meetings plus three advisory boards plus all the other committees we're all on, and so I think our intent is that we're going to be there as best we always can, and I don't know that I really need the council policy to tell me I have to be there at something I'm acting as a liaison. So I was comfortable with the language the way that Mr. Schultz or Ms. Luker put it in.
May I respond to that while you're discussing it? The reason I did is because we know what we wanted there. A new council may not. And when it says that you may elect to attend, it sounds like it's not really necessary. And we do want that interaction. And that's why I put that you could watch the meeting instead, which is what I've done. I wasn't able to stay for the whole meeting, so I just caught it on Channel 20 later. And so that was the reasoning behind it.
And I agree with that, but a new council may choose to go in and change this anyway.
Oh, that's true.
You know, and
that's
so
true.
I wasn't looking to make it so stringent in the words. But, you know, that's fine. I'm just...
Okay.
Expressing my opinion on it.
All right.
And then the last item is on the hiring. I would almost just be my interest would be going to the second paragraph, taking out the first few words that says in an internal recruitment situation, and just rather than having the social setting or whatever, that the city manager provide a hiring plan to the city council in closed session, and council members will have an opportunity to comment prior to the final hiring versus the first paragraph.
But if you do that, how do you have anything to respond to if you've not met the candidates?
It's not my job. My job as a council person is to hire the city manager. She's the CEO. It's her job to hire the employees, not mine. And if she or he are going to come to council and bring us a hiring plan of what the intent is to fill the needs, and we have an opportunity to participate in that, I don't need to pick and choose who those individuals are. It isn't up to whether maybe I'm compatible with them personality-wise or not. It's her decision. They work for her or him.
And this is not intended that you would say yes or no. It's intended to say, I noticed this. This is something I thought was really valuable about this person. I think it's more evaluative than
Betty,
it is the other.
I think Carla understands it, so let's not argue about it. Let's just state what we feel and go from there. So Carla, you finished with your comments?
Yeah, that's just on that one. I felt that way. We had a little opportunity for some input, but not to the level where I feel like we're micromanaging her hiring choice or his hiring choices.
Okay, Rick, you had another comment?
Yeah, well, I like what you said and how you said it because I agree with you. And as far as your additions, that's fine. I feel secure with the wisdom of the majority calling for closed session, so I'll stay with that. And I'll go back to that just one more time. 5.5.1 seems like a group interview, the way that's written. And like you say, it's not our job to do that. We can take it upon ourselves to meet these folks and give our input, but this just sounds like a group interview and don't like it.
Okay. I have one more comment about your comment.
All right.
But were you going to talk first?
No, go ahead. I was going to make a motion.
I wanted to say under where you're talking about the liaison, mm-hmm. If we're going to go with your language, I don't like the idea that we just talk to the chair. I thought our was more about the whole committee, and that I just don't go and speak to that chairman all the time, because then it's like one person from mm-hmm. the council is interacting with that chairperson, and that I'd rather have some distance there. And so I would just eliminate that one little part that you put in there referring to the chair.
I didn't actually put that in. That was already there. I just left it in.
Then I would take it out.
It says maintain communication with the commission chair.
Yeah, I would do the attendance and the observation and not talk to that person.
Well, how about we just take out the word chair?
You can, if that works.
Yeah, okay.
Commissioner board.
I'll do it in the motion.
Or simply maintain communications with the commissioner board.
Commission, right.
Commissioner or
by the time you become a city manager, you probably would never do that, but
right.
Then I say that and look, it might happen.
maybe could we just add a little phrase at the end?
Anonymous comments?
Yeah, that they would like the city manager to consider in regard to the performance in an anonymous way or
I would say a double. We would put that they would remain confidential and not be put in the department head's personnel file.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good. All right. I would move that we approve these additions to our policy with...
Madam Mayor, can we do these in sections?
Yeah. Oh, you mean, okay, each one at a time?
Yes.
All right. Well, we're all agreed on 4.2.8 with the shall added. We all agreed with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so we'll start with the 1.3.10, and I will move that we approve that as is.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, 3-2, Winholtz and Smuckler opposed. 4-2-8, we've had consensus on. Do you need a motion on that one, too? Okay. On 6.2.1, I move that we approve it with the wording eliminating the first sentence in the first paragraph and reading the city council shall assign a council liaison, et cetera, et cetera. And in the second paragraph, on the fourth line after assignment, members should either attend, et cetera, or watch the meeting broadcasts and maintain communication with the commission on a regular basis. I'm sorry, and crossing out the words periodically to observe the activities of the advisory body or simply. I know, Bridget, that's very confusing, and I'll give you my printout.
Yeah, or I'll give it.
Okay. I'll give you this, too. And that's true. It's coming back. And on 6, okay, that's the movement on that one. Should we? Yeah, okay, we can go ahead to 6.3.3. Advisory boards will provide quarterly written or oral reports. Yes, sorry.
Well, on 6.2.1,
uh-huh.
Do you want to make that a motion?
Yes. Well, this one I was going to put all the 6.2s together.
But
it's 6.3. I'm sorry. Okay.
Okay. So is there
yes.
A second to that motion?
Second.
Okay. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. 6.3.3, I move that we simply add the words between quarterly and reports, written or oral. Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. And then 5.5, I move that we approve it as is.
Second.
The additional language of remaining confidential.
Yes, I'm
last
sorry.
Line.
Yes, with
I'm
the additional.
I'm sorry, which one was that?
The 5.5.
The whole thing?
Yes, with the addition on 5.5.2 that comments remain confidential.
And you want to leave in social settings such as lunch?
I do, yes.
Stuff?
Yes. Okay.
I think we're going to lose this.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, 3-2 with Orchard and Grantham opposed. Okay, I think we did it.
You're micromanaging the city manager.
I did.
Okay. All right. One more thing to go. Item D7, letter regarding the registration fee to attend the League of California Cities annual business meeting. Betty.
This is came up because we had looked at attending the annual meeting of the League of Cities, California Cities, but saw that it was several hundred dollars just to attend a couple of hour meeting, that you had to pay for the whole day. And it's not likely that we would have gone down anyways because of the location, but if it had been in Monterey or Santa Barbara, I would have been encouraging someone to go down and represent the city at a meeting. And so for those people or those cities that are close to where the annual meeting is held and feels their budget is too tight to fork out $400 just to vote, it reminds me of poll taxes in the South, frankly. And so I don't think we should have to pay to vote in an organization that we belong to and are members of. That's redundant, but you understand what I'm trying to say. So I'm suggesting, rather than go straight to the big guys, that we ask the mayor to take this to the mayor's meeting in the county and get feedback to see if this is reasonable or unreasonable. And depending on their response or amendment to it, then we would take it to our division, which is the three counties, and see how it floats there. But I don't think it hurts, regardless of whether, well, it's too much money, we wouldn't do it anyways.
And it may be that they wouldn't eliminate the fee, but maybe they would at least.
And if they want to do it as the mayor signing it or all the council signing it, we'll see what their response can be.
It does say that it goes from us to them, so maybe it should say mayor.
I see. I'm sorry. So you're addressing this to the other mayor.
Yes.
Okay.
The council is asking the mayors to.
Okay.
So I would move that the city council approve this letter to be sent to the mayors of the city of the county of San Luis.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
I know we've already done this, but regarding D6, just a question. In the past, is this a city expense on 551 that the city's picked up the tab for before?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Future agenda items.
I would like some other amendments to come back to the tree ordinance, but I won't do it now until after we're done with this cycle.
Okay. Rick? Noah?
Yes, please.
Noah? Carla?
I just have a couple questions. I think I asked last month about the RFPs or whatever title they have, and if we could get an update on where those are in the loop for transit and promotions.
Transit is out currently. It's advertised on our website. I've got some draft promotion RFPs that I'm working on putting it together at this point. So they're both in progress.
Thank you.
You bet.
And also, since there's been a change at the visitor center in staffing with the CEO gone and interim CEO, the president out, is there oversight over from the city? Are you overseeing that money and things that are going on down there? In representing us?
At this point, not any more than we have been. I will tell you, though, that they have turned in their books for this last year, and Susan is currently doing a review of those books. We'll be meeting with them in the near future to review what she's found, and then we'll be bringing a report to the City Council. So we're not doing anything more than we have in the past with the current operation of the Visitor Center, but we're doing, as you ask, to review their books from last year.
On the same topic, are they giving their monthly statements to us as is in the new contract?
They haven't yet. I would anticipate that coming up. And we also have been asked. I've been asked to sit on their interview panel, and we're working on that as well for the new CEO.
I'm sorry. I misspoke. They have turned in their reports to the promotions committee?
They've turned in what they normally turn in, but they haven't given anything extra as of yet for their month of July.
There's a game on.
but extra doesn't mean, I mean, it's in the contract that they turn in their financials. So by extra, you mean in addition to the new requirements?
The financials that they were to give in their contract, we have not seen those yet for the month of July.
Okay.
But we'll, I think I'm not answering your questions well, but we will be following up to make sure that we get those. Excuse me.
I'm still on the same subject. I'm sorry. I guess I have a concern, and so I guess I would hope or ask that you would be just kind of monitoring it, because my understanding is that with no CEO and interim CEO, and the president of the board has been out with health issues, and there's no vice president because he's the interim CEO. So I'm just concerned about the oversight of the city's money and funding and if it's still properly being utilized down there, I guess.
I know that the president, I talked to him the other day, and it's my understanding that he's somewhat back.
Okay.
So I don't know if that helps or not.
No. Okay. Maybe you could let us know when you get some information.
Yeah, I would second that. I think there's reason for an inquiry.
I'd just like an update or...
Yeah. Yeah. Memo, whatever. Okay. All right. Noah, you have the closing quote for us?
Sure.
All right.
Rick's more than ready. He wants to get to watch the game.
Notice that the stiffest tree is most easily cracked, while the bamboo or willow survives by bending with the wind or flood. That's Bruce Lee.
Oh, perfect. And very appropriate. With that, we're adjourned.